Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm very happy to be with you here this Friday afternoon. We got a big show ahead for you. We're actually going to be joined by Palm Beach Pete in this first hour, but I want to begin today with a major announcement posted by Nick Sortor, clip 30. Secretary Rubio just brokered a framework agreement for peace between Israel and Lebanon. Let's take a look at that now.
God bless Israel. May God bless Lebanon. May God bless the United States of America and all those who pursue peace. Thank you.
So this is the signing between Lebanon and Israel and the United States as they have the framework to a potential agreement. We'll see where this goes and if it, they actually make anything of it. Israel-Lebanon signed framework deal for slight IDF withdrawal after 4 days of talks in D.C. A lot of people in Lebanon are not happy about this, claiming that essentially Lebanon's been sold out, but we'll bring you all the updates you need on the latest in the negotiations, of course, in Iran. There's been a bit of a kerfuffle, you might say, with the Iranian regime threatening ships and, in fact, firing on ships in the Strait of Hormuz. We can go to clip number 6 here. This was posted late in the evening yesterday by the Iran News. Let's watch. You know, the interesting thing, you don't even need to know what he's saying. Look at his face. He's trying very hard to hide a smirk here. He's trying very hard not to grin as he's announcing the fact that they are not beaten down, they're not incapable of defending the strait, and that the Strait of Hormuz will be in their hands for the foreseeable future. And that, of course, was what was behind the action yesterday. Perhaps a reminder to Donald Trump that the Strait of Hormuz is still very firmly in their control, with no sign of that changing anytime soon. We're also going to be talking about, and actually, guys, if the crew wants to try to grab some more videos, Donald Trump was live just before our show began, going very strongly against communism, which is good to see. It's very good to see that he recognizes that the DSA, the so-called Democratic Socialists of America, are not, in fact, democratic or socialist, but are just straight-up communists in disguise. Mamdani is fulfilling that label with his actions with the seizure of major real estate in New York. And we'll explain exactly how this works. We'll go over exactly what the steps are that they're putting in place, because it's really not that complicated. They're essentially stopping landlords from raising prices. They want to rent control everything, but they're doing nothing to stop the costs of the landlord from going up. So all you're going to have is a bunch of landlords going into default because they can't pay their bills because they can't raise the rates on people. And once they go into default, or once they stop being able to supply the upkeep that they typically would for their buildings, then they have already in place the mechanism by which the New York City Council can seize the building and hand it off literally to an NGO that they control. So this has started, and if you don't interrupt it, this is going to be the process. They're going to freeze out landlords from improving their buildings, claim that the buildings aren't being improved upon, so therefore we have to seize it. They seize it, they hand it off to their, literally like a socialist co-op that they operate. So the communist takeover is on at this point, and we've been warning you for a while now, and we'll continue to warn you, that they are literally planning a communist takeover on May 1st, 2028. We know the date they're planning on, and all of this is in preparation for that. So we'll talk about what the Democrats are doing to facilitate this takeover. Even though some of them do seem to be recognizing the threat that communism poses, and a large faction of Democrats have broken away and signed the America First Pledge, we'll get into all of that and more. But first, we'll be joined by Palm Beach Pete. He joins me on the other side. Stay with us. You're not going to want to miss it. It's a big episode of War Room Live. Share the link, alexjoneslive.com. Follow us on X. I'm at Harrison H. Smith, and we'll be right back.
The info war is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the info war. articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. AlexJonesLive.com is the URL to share. That, of course, has all of the articles, all the video, all the live streams, and more. Support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Palm Beach Pete. At least that's the name he goes by online. His real name, Peter Bart Simmel, a retired commercial real estate executive, former Division I tennis player, and social media influencer from Florida. He gained massive viral fame in early 2026 after a video of him driving a convertible on I-95 in South Florida was posted online. Strangers thought he was Jeffrey Epstein back from the dead, sparking conspiracy theories due to his striking physical similarity to the late financier. You, of course, quickly addressed the rumors and clarified that you are not Jeffrey Epstein. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Harrison. I'm definitely not Jeffrey Epstein. I'm just Peter Simmel, retired, living my life, and Palm Beach Pete.
Likely story, Pete. Likely. Here's my question. How do we know? How do we know that you're not? Because part of me just completely believes you. I'm all for it. You know, obviously, you don't seem like Jeffrey Epstein. But the other part of me is like, would that not be exactly the type of thing Jeffrey Epstein would do? Would he not revel in the fact that he could come out? So what proof have you offered to dissuade people who believe that you are, in fact, Jeffrey Epstein?
Well, I don't think someone would be that brazen or blatant to be parading around being on social media like I am and be Epstein. So, I mean, the authorities would apprehend him immediately. So that's one thing that wouldn't work. And secondly, I know who I am. I know where I was born. I'm different age than him, different height than him. We took a lie detector test. That went fine. We have a DNA test right now. We're waiting for the results of that. And that's what's going on.
Well, and so was this sort of the first time that you had any like media presence? Obviously, it was the first time I saw you, you know, the classic video of you driving the car.
Right.
It looked a lot like Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, what was your life up to that point?
I was a retired real estate executive. I had moved down to Palm Beach about 2 years ago from New York City. Had a great condo on the ocean, playing a lot of tennis, going out, socializing. Honestly, I was a little bit bored, and this kind of fell into my lap, and it became a third career for me, and I'm having a blast with it. And how many guys my age get to hang out with the coolest influencers, make really fun content, get greeted warmly, and monetize off of it, and have a blast? It's fantastic, Harrison.
Well, and potentially get some political power, too. You're running for mayor of Palm Beach, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. I'm running in platform for 2028. I have a very fun, unique platform. It's all about living a better life, a healthier life in Palm Beach, because that's why people move down there. And we have free Botox for the residents of the island, free dog walking services, free use of a convertible, a trainer so you can live longer, pay taxes longer, free mother-in-law service counseling.
What?
All these fun things.
Well, how are you gonna pay for all this? Sounds like socialism to me.
It's not socialism. It's just making a better life. We have some ideas that we could get the pharmaceutical companies to offer Botox, and then people will pay for it later down the road. So that's an example. And I'm self-funding this, and It's really a fun thing. It's so early right now in the campaign. You know, you don't have to declare until 2027. So those are some of the ideas that we're putting out there to the people.
So why start off so low? Why not shoot for the stars? Why not be running for Congress or Senate or governorship? It's a pretty competitive race there in Florida. Are you running as on a in a party for a party
Independent.
Ticket?
Independent.
Okay.
Independent Harrison. Yeah. I wanted to start and put my feet in the water and see how I would do as a mayor and see what happens.
Well,
I don't really want to travel that much. So being in my hometown would make perfect sense.
So I was going to, you know, being from Palm Beach, I assumed that you had run into Jeffrey Epstein, but if you only moved there 2 years ago, you know, that was too late to start a friendship, I guess. Being in New York, so you came from New York 2 years ago. What is your take on the path New York is taking? That's going to be a big part of our coverage today about Mamdani freezing rent for 1 million renters after Mamdani packs rent guideline boards.
I heard your little segment on that.
Yeah.
The real estate industry is the most powerful industry in this city and in this state. And there's so many lobbyists and so many well-to-do, smart landlords. They will not lose the buildings. The owners that have marginal buildings and only getting by, they might be in some trouble. But the major landlords and the big families that have fourth generation ownership of buildings, that's not going to happen.
So what is going to be the effect? I mean, well, first of all, what's your experience? I mentioned it in your bio here, but all it says is that you worked in commercial real estate. Well, what is your experience in real estate in New York? Were you in New York City? And, you know, what effect is this going to have?
I was a commercial leasing broker for the largest firm in the world called CBRE, and I leased office space to hedge fund, private equity funds, law firms, and creative firms. So I dealt with the big landlords on the commercial side. So, I think New York is always going to be New York. The buildings aren't going to go to these socialist co-ops and run. It's a long process. It's not going to happen overnight.
Oh, it sounds like it's being put into place, though. I mean, well, what is the effect going to be? I mean, when you have the government coming in and freezing rent, I mean, what effect is that going to have? Am I not correct that that's going to make it harder for landlords to, you know, keep up with their bills if they can't raise rates?
Freezing rents is kind of a dramatic term. They still get bumps. They're just not going to get as big as bumps in the increases of the rents they've experienced. And you can't turn an apartment over from rent control to rent stabilize and put it onto the open market like that. The landlords are very savvy and they know what they're doing.
So what's going to happen?
I think it's going to be status quo for the time being.
It's not going to make a difference, but it is starting the process.
I don't think, personally, what has occurred? Do you know anything that's occurred? Has any buildings gone to any of these co-ops?
No, I think.
Running by, none has, because it would have been all over the papers.
Right. Well, the program would have just gotten started, so it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
but,
well, you're sensationalizing it. Nothing has happened, and they're talking a lot. And honestly, the landlords will hold on to their building.
Okay, so you're saying the law is not going to go into effect? Like, well, what do you mean? I mean, this
it's
is
not a law. It's not a law. Landlords are allowed to increase their rents X amount by the rent stabilization laws, X percent a year, and they have to negotiate that. So they won't be able to get a big bump. That's what's going to happen. And they're not going to lose their buildings. They'll be able to cover their buildings and their operating costs.
Well, they are talking about seizing buildings. I mean, that is, you know, one of the plans they have run.
They, as in Mamdani?
Right.
Well, let them talk about it, but they haven't done it yet. Have they, Harrison?
Are we only allowed to talk about it once it happens?
No, but I'm saying, has it happened? That's all I'm saying.
I don't believe it has. I mean, he's only been mayor for a couple months, but they've obviously hit the ground running.
Yeah. Let him try.
Okay.
I have a phone. Sorry, something's going on with my phone. Sorry, Harrison.
So the story from Post Millennial, the Rent Guidelines Board with 6 to 9 members appointed by socialist Zoran Mamdani met on June 25th and decided there would be absolutely no rent increases for rent-stabilized apartments in New York City. Ahead of the vote, one landlord resigned from the board. Only one member voted no, so the rent freeze passed 7-1. You know, obviously, Mamdani is not going to be satisfied with some you know, minor change to the way things operate. I mean, he's clearly wanting to reshape the way that real estate is handled in New York City. You just think he's going to not be able to do it because of the power of the real estate establishment?
I think it's going to get held up in the courts. He's going to try to have no increases. I don't think the landlords are going to lose the buildings because they're not getting a 3% increase or a 6% increase. I think landlords will be just fine. And they'll figure it out.
Then why did the law need to be passed?
What's the law say? It's not a law.
Right.
It's a guideline. It's a big difference.
Okay, so it's not going to have an effect? So what is your...
That's my opinion. That's my opinion, Harrison.
So what is your take on everything else that's happened in New York with the, you know, elections this week being swept by the socialists?
Pretty interesting stuff. I didn't follow the elections that closely, but they sure had a landslide, and the Democrats and Republicans, they're not in favor right now.
Well, and what do you think the effect is that of that is going to be? Because again, if this bill, whatever
well, like
it is,
like I said, I didn't follow the other candidates' platforms, so maybe you can enlighten me.
Well, they're all socialists. So what do you think the outcome?
What are they saying?
What do you think the outcome of a bunch of socialists being elected?
What are they asking for?
Well, things like seizing buildings for landlords that they don't like, things like that.
Harrison, you just can't seize a building. That's a very strong word. They can't seize a building. There's a process. There's courts. The landlords are strong. So, like, stop that nonsense. It's just nonsense when you say seize a building.
Well, what other word would you use? I mean, they're talking about seizing buildings.
They can't seize a building.
What do you mean?
They're not talking about seizing buildings.
Yes, they are.
Where does it say they're going to seize buildings? They're trying to stop the increases of the rents. They didn't say they're seizing buildings. That's ridiculous.
No,
seriously.
Yeah, no, it's a separate policy, but they absolutely are, guys. I don't know if y'all have
well,
that story
we,
that
we
gathered for it.
We have a difference of opinion there. You're using strong words of seizing buildings. That happens.
What else would you call it? I mean, yeah, there will be a process it goes through, but
I'm
it's the process.
I'm calling it they're putting a rent freeze on rents. Big difference between rent freezing and seizing buildings.
So these are, these are two different things. I'm saying they're going to work in tandem, but they already have a process in place so that they can seize buildings that landlords are not keeping up to snuff.
Can we move on to another subject because we don't agree, and obviously you're not really in the know of real estate, and
I know.
Using the word seize does not happen.
That's why I'm asking you. Mom Donnie's plan to seize property, explain.
Well, I told you my opinion. It's not going to happen, okay?
Okay,
so
I'm asking why.
What else do you want to talk about? I said there's going to be rent freezings, and then you said they're going to be seizing. So we're on two different opinions here.
It's not my opinion. I'm asking you what you think is going to happen because you.
And I just told you what's going to happen. The worst case scenario, in my opinion, is they won't be able to raise rents and the buildings will not be seized. Period. End of story.
Okay, so it's just not going to happen then.
Yep.
All right. Well, what else you got for us? What are your plans for Palm Beach? How about this? Do you think Jeffrey Epstein is dead?
I clearly think he's dead.
That's suspicious. Why do you think he's dead?
Well, there was an autopsy. They had him on a gurney leaving the jail. I think he was probably at wit's end that he couldn't live his life anymore. And he put his estate and affairs in order while he was in jail, and he killed himself. Well, I'm not him, so where is he then?
That's a great question. I guess that would be the next question. Where do you think he would go?
I have no clue. I think he went 6 feet under, honestly.
So you think he killed himself? Have you looked into Did you know much about Epstein before people started saying you looked like him? Had you looked into his case or anything?
Yeah, I read a lot of articles. There was a great expose in Vanity Fair about him. Then the bio about the documentary about him. And, you know, I heard a lot about him. I had a friend that knew him pretty well. So,
oh, you did?
He was a mysterious financier, yeah.
How'd your friend know him well?
I'd rather not comment about it.
Wow. You brought it up. How well did he know him? You don't have to name him or anything.
It was not a him.
Mm. So, you know, you're there in Palm Beach. That's where Jeffrey Epstein was. Do people talk
yes.
about it around there? And, you know, the people that did know him, I mean, what do they say about him?
Well, I don't know anyone down in Palm Beach that knew him, but he's always in the news, and this whole thing isn't going away, in my opinion, until all the files are released and we have all the information between all the people that he conspired with.
Well, it doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon.
No, they're sure taking their sweet time about it.
Well, and
that's why people are so interested about him, because all the facts aren't out yet and all the emails aren't out and the Department of Justice hasn't released all the files. So well, there's always that big question mark hanging over that situation.
And the ones that they have released have only really inspired more questions. Obviously, Leon Black
right.
was being questioned by Congress earlier today. Judge orders DOJ to either unredact more Epstein files or explain why they must stay blacked out. So this is kind of my thing, is clearly our establishment is comfortable breaking the law in order to cover up some of Jeffrey Epstein's activities. The law says they had to release all of these files in an unredacted fashion. They've not done that. So, I mean, does that make you suspicious of any of the official story about his death or, you know, the way it all went down?
I don't think it has to do with the death. I think it's more Harrison to protect the people who are in high power, but not about the death. They must be happy that he's dead.
Do you think they killed him?
No, I think he killed himself.
Hmm. Is there anything about the Jeffrey Epstein official story you don't trust?
No, I think it's pretty, in my opinion, what's out there. He killed himself. He did terrible things. Maybe there are more victims that didn't come forward, but what I read and what I see in the press is pretty accurate portrayal of what occurred.
Yeah, kind of. So why do you think he was given such a sweetheart deal? It was in Palm Beach, right? And I don't know if it was local Palm Beach. I believe it was a federal case, because it was what's his name? I'm blanking on his name right now.
I know. The guy that was a secretary of something, and then he had to resign, and he was the guy that made the deal. Listen, he had high-powered lawyers that negotiated this deal for him. He had an incredible sweetheart deal. It was a work release program. He never spent night in jail. And then he was so brazen and so above the law in his mind that he was stupid enough to get on his private jet and fly back from Paris to Teterboro Airport. And he got apprehended, put in Manhattan Correctional Facility. I think he thought that was the end of it for him. And he hung himself in jail.
With toilet paper?
No, it was a sheet.
A paper sheet. So this is not to go back, but I don't understand this stuff. So if you understand it better, that, you know, this is why I need it explained. In addition to the usual pablum that Zoran Mamdani's plan will finally make the city more quote unquote affordable and fair by quote taxing the rich and building more housing, Zoran proudly announced the central component of his plan to target bad landlords for seizure of their property and crucially to transfer ownership of those properties to politically aligned cadres like tenant cooperatives and nonprofits, an effort backed by the mayor's new taxpayer funded $53 million.
That's okay. Those slumlords need to be have their buildings run correctly. And if they can't do it, then the city should take over and run it properly. But the big major landlords and the multifamily landlords who run real buildings and give services to their tenants, they're not going to lose their buildings. It's these slumlords that don't give heat in the winter and they gouge their tenants. They don't deserve to be landlords. And I have no problem with him making housing more affordable for the people in New York City. If you can't run your building right, then you have a chance of losing your building. There are horrific landlords out there, and they try to force their tenants out so they could jack up their rents, and they harass them. That's not right.
Well, aren't there laws forbidding that already?
They've been getting away with it for years. I mean, they have so many inspectors, and, you know, it gets held up in court. And while that's all going on, these people move out of the buildings and the rents go up. We're talking about landlords that are on the cusp. They're not running good buildings.
Yeah,
and they don't care about their tenants. There are some fantastic landlords in the city, old generation families, the Rudins, the Fishers. They're great landlords. They run great buildings.
So how are they feeling about Mamdani's proposal? Because obviously, you know, this is one. The, you know, rent freeze is another.
I'm not in the real estate game anymore, but I would imagine the real estate industry, they're not fans of Mamdani. And what he did to Ken Griffin and shot that video in front of his building where he lived for the luxury tax, and it backfired. Ken Griffin was going to build a million-square-foot building for his Citadel Capital, New York City, and he decided he's not going to do that, and he's changed his plan. He's moving them all down to Miami. So it was a stupid move by Mamdani, really bad move. And, you know, he's kind of like biting the hand that feeds New York, because they're the most powerful organization and they pay the biggest amount of taxes. So it's just, I don't understand his thinking, quite frankly, Harrison.
Right. So this is why it's interesting to me. It's like, it's clearly going to have an effect. It's going to have really probably a feedback loop effect where, yeah, you're going to get landlords no longer building buildings that they were going to build otherwise. I mean, where does this go from here? That's why I'm kind of confused, you know. That's just like, well, this is nothing. It's like, clearly it is having an impact.
There's always flips in a row. Who knows where he's going to be in 4 years? But I got to be frank with you. New York City is the center of the world. Every major business has a presence here. Every young graduate that comes to New York, the best talent comes to New York. So New York is always going to thrive. So I'm not worried about New York City. It's the landlords that run really bad buildings and don't put money back into the buildings. Those are the ones that are going to be in problem. But the strong landlords, they'll be fine. They'll be worried, and they don't like Mamdani, his politics, but they're strong enough and they're smart enough to figure it out.
But as mayor of Palm Beach, you would not be trying to freeze anybody's rent or anything like that.
No, no. I'm open for a free economy.
All right. So in the last minute we have here, I mean, give us your pitch. Palm Beach Pete for mayor. Give us your elevator pitch.
Okay. So my elevator pitch is a lot of the talent in the financial industries are moving down to West Palm Beach because of the tax situation, the cost of living, the quality of life. And the same thing is going to happen in Palm Beach. Obviously, there's not a lot of commercial product in Palm Beach, but we can make quality of life better and make more people come and visit the island. So just making better life experiences for the residents of Palm Beach. That's my 1 minute pitch.
With free Botox.
Of course. You got to look good, feel good.
Palm Beach Pete, everybody. You can follow him, go to his website, voteforpalmbeachpete.com. His Instagram is real.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And, of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Yeah.
And I've always hoped that, you know, the U.S. never does it. But we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast. Because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds, that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die, right? So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything, and on the banking system.
And let's be clear, though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get-out-of-jail-free card, right? We could print as much money as we want, and everybody around the world still needed the U.S. dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country, other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery of it at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything, because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery
rounds. But then you can roll over the financial instruments, too.
1-ounce gold bars or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire as funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Dr. Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us. So it supports the broadcast. KEPM.com/gold or 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation. Or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go. KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go. The best investment the last 2+ years. And you can just check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You just sell it back. For no cost, nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're going to keep talking about Mom Donnie and the socialist takeover, the threat of communism. I got to say, I don't understand the response. And it's a very common one. I feel like I had a term for this at one point, because I've talked about this before. And it's this thing where if you say something is going to happen, people say, well, you're crazy, that hasn't happened yet. You're like, no, but it's going to. And then it does happen. And then once it happens, you go, well, look what's happening. And people go, well, yeah, but now it's happening and that's just how it is now. So you just have to stay. And it's like, wait, what? There's this weird thing where it's like, oh, something hasn't happened yet. Then we don't need to worry about it. And once it is happening, then that's just the way it is. And you just have to accept that. I don't get it. I don't understand. Again, I mean, maybe we should have kept old Pete on for longer. But it just feels awkward to me. It's like, but this happens all the time where it's like Mom Donnie's like, we're going to seize the buildings. And then I'm like, they're going to seize the buildings. And then they're like, you're crazy. Why would you say that? You're blowing it out of proportion. It's like, no, they said they're going to seize the buildings. I believe them. They're definitely going to try, and if it doesn't work, then they're going to try again, and if it doesn't work that time, then they're going to try again. Eventually, seize the buildings. And it's going to be a feedback loop. And it's like, yeah, the wealthy landlords and builders are no longer investing in New York. A lot of them are moving to Florida. I mean, that's going to have a tangible, sizable impact on the character of New York from now on. But again, this happens all the time. I have it online where it's people being like, are you still schizo posting about red heifers? And it's like, I'm quoting Benjamin Netanyahu. What are you talking about? Benjamin Netanyahu is like, we're rebuilding the third temple and the Messiah is going to come. And I'm like, this sounds like an apocalyptic cult they're doing. People are like, you're crazy. Why are you so obsessed with this idea of rebuilding the third temple? It's like, what? I'm not. They're the ones saying it. It genuinely makes you feel crazy. Makes you feel crazy. It's like, you're blowing this out of proportion. Just like I'm reading verbatim what the mayor said. What? I don't get it, personally. I don't understand. I don't understand that mindset. Because it's like the mindset that got us where we are now. What do I always say? To be a conspiracy theorist, you have to understand things don't just happen. Well, things do happen. And oftentimes, before they've happened, if you try to stop them, people tell you, you can't stop it, it hasn't happened. And it's like, but it's going to. It's going to happen. They're going to do it. They're saying they're going to do it. They're putting the places in peace to do it. They're funding the programs to do it. I think they're going to do it, y'all. I'm truly baffled by that mindset. And it is maybe the, like, it's like the ubiquitous mindset. I mean, that is probably the number one way I've been responded to when I talk about things that should concern everybody. I had the same thing on the debate I did with Destiny several years ago. I can't remember what the exact topic was, but it was like, oh, well, there were a couple things, but one of them certainly was me talking about the World Economic Forum and the Bilderberg meetings, being like, you know, billionaires get together in secret to plot their operation. You know that, right? And it's just like, it's undeniable. The sky is blue, right? It's a big group. They've got a website. And it was Destiny just being like, yeah, I don't believe you. It's just like, okay, what? What do you mean you don't believe me? What are you talking about? It's just like, yeah, I just don't believe you that's happening. It's like, no, but it absolutely is happening. So now that that's established, what's your actual view here? But same thing. Destiny does the same thing too, where you go, hey, they're trying to, whatever it is, they're trying to replace white people in this country. And they're like, but white people still exist in this country. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, who are you talking to? Because I'm trying to have a conversation about something that's actually happening, that they're talking about it happening, that they're planning for it to happen. I don't want it to happen. I'm going to try to defend against it. You seem not to want it to happen either, but you refuse to acknowledge that it is happening. Once it is happening, then you'll refuse to acknowledge that there was ever a possibility to stop it in the first place. I was like, well, this is just how it goes. I'm like, that just like threw me for a loop. I'm like so confused, or I'm still confused. I'm just in a state of confusion right now. Where it's just like, because this is how it always happens. It's like, hey, you know they're going to seize buildings. And they're like, stop blowing things out of proportion. That's not happening. And then like in a year from now, they're going to start seizing buildings. We're going to go, see, they're seizing buildings. People are going to go, yeah, they're seizing buildings, of course. Why wouldn't they? And you're like, what? You know, the thing with the mask. I mean, it just time and time again. I don't know, man. Well, what do we do? What do we do when people just like won't acknowledge the massive changes that are being foisted on us as if they don't matter? Even though they recognize that they matter. I don't know, man. I'm just baffled by all of this. So let's talk about what's happening in New York and where it goes from here and how this is all part and parcel with the wider Great Reset New World Order operation to enslave us all. Is it too much to understand? Like, is it uncomfortable for you so you'd rather not believe it? And then once it's happening, you can convince yourself that that's because all the correct processes would take. Like, that's, he says they're not going to seize buildings. There would be a process. It's like, yeah, the process to seize the building. That's the process. What are we talking about? So New York City freezes rent for 1 million renters after Mamdani packs rent guidelines board. The rent guidelines board, with 6 of 9 members appointed by Mayor Zoran Mamdani, met on June 25th and decided there would be absolutely no rent increase for rent-stabilized apartments in New York City. Ahead of the vote, one landlord resigned from the board. Only one member voted no, and the rent freeze passed 7-1. Mamdani hailed his board for passing the measure, fulfilling one of his many campaign promises, saying, "This is a historic victory for New York City tenants." After reviewing the data and hearing from New Yorkers across the city, our independent RGB has delivered a freeze on 1 year leases and the first ever freeze on 2 years leases in our city's history. Just like, again, you know, as if this wasn't something he ran on and promised to do. Now he's saying, oh, well, we studied it and we listened to New Yorkers across the city. It's just like, no, you didn't. You just wanted to do this, so you did it. But you want to dress it up as if it is the Democratic will, even though it isn't. Not necessarily. Certainly not from the people it impacts. Another one of the campaign promises was to seize private property from landlords who do not make mandated repairs or pay assessed fines on their property. Landlords argue that rising costs met with an inability to increase income will lead to fewer repairs and upkeep. This could lead to fines and assessments and eventually to private property seizure. Which is crazy, apparently. This will never happen. Okay. Rent Guidelines Board meets yearly to set rent increases for rent-stabilized apartments, which affects about 44% or 1 million out of 2.3 million apartments. This year, the board recommended 0% increases for both 1- and 2-year leases. In April, the board released a report showing that rent-stabilized housing insurance soared from 10.5% in 2006 year over year, which fuel and maintenance, while fuel and maintenance rose 11% and 6% respectively, the New York Post reports. Landlord representative Christina Smith, who served on the board, resigned on Thursday ahead of the vote. She said in a letter to her colleagues on the board that the board had stopped being a fact-finding body. She said this rebuilt board was required to deliver a rent freeze. Everything since then has been theater. And like, it's not even about this particular thing happening. It's about the method by which literal communists or their socialist collaborators manipulate the system to get what they want. They'll take over a body that has been impaneled ostensibly to do something that is unbiased and by the numbers, sort of a technocratic organization. They'll pack it with their people and they'll use it to impose ideological imperatives that are their own, their exclusive belief. Like, it doesn't matter how it impacts other people. They just want to do it. And it's not just, you know, you want rent control. Well, you got to go through all these processes to get it, or you can just pack the board with your people and they can just vote for it. And then you can act like you went through the proper procedure. Same thing they're going to do with the Supreme Court. You understand that? It's the exact same method they're going to use to destroy your political freedoms, your God-given rights. They're going to pack the Supreme Court so that they decide against your rights or against anything that is in opposition to their ideological bent, which is, by the way, communistic and destructive and evil. So we got to recognize these strategies and then work to prevent them. And we have to see what they're doing before they actually do it, because otherwise you can't stop them doing it. It's just going to happen. Let's go to this video from Mamdani where he's looking in the refrigerator. He's talking about rent freezing. And I just say, you know, I really sort of despise Mamdani's social media presence. I really, there's almost nothing more infuriating than just a hateful authoritarian psycho who puts on a big smile and does a song and dance on social media, acting like what he's doing isn't destroying everything that your ancestors built. Let's go to clip 25 here. Mayor Zoran Mamdani talking about freezing the rent. Let's watch.
New York, the Independent Rent Guidelines Board just froze the rent. That means if you're one of the more than 2 million New Yorkers who lives in a rent-stabilized apartment, your rent's going to be frozen next year.
Wow, amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, it's great. It's going to be amazing. Now, I believe the number, try to find it here, I believe 44% of rent-controlled apartments in New York City are occupied by people born somewhere other than the United States. So for all of the millions of hostile foreigners that live in Europe, live in New York, rather, this would be a really amazing thing for people that built the city. Not so much. Not so much. We can go now to clip number 20, because this is actually the bigger deal to me. I genuinely don't care that much about New York City. I mean, I do, because it's a great city, and I do love New York. It is extremely unique. It is America manifest. But in the same way that it represents everything about America, the good, it also represents the bad. It also sort of a bellwether of where our entire country's going. As we demographically replace the people that built this country, you get a bunch of people that don't care or understand or even give lip service to our founding principles. They don't seem to comprehend that those principles themselves are in fact indelibly intertwined with our success. That never seems to break through. That never seems to be acknowledged. That, like, all of these things that they're trying to destroy, it's that classic cartoon or whatever it is where it's this giant construct of civilization, all these various parts, and there's like one little brick that's keeping it all up. And the guy's like, well, we don't need this anymore, right? We can take this out. I mean, look how tall it is. We don't need this stuff at the bottom, right? It's like, no, America was built on the foundation of these principles. When you go after these principles, you are destroying everything that is great about America. You are going to render America into a third world hellhole. And it's already happening. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen with a single decision or a single mayoral race. Each one of these instances is another drop in the bucket. Eventually, it's going to overflow. Eventually, it's going to be too much to contain unless we felt like doing literally anything to stop it at this point now. But we're not. So it'll just keep going. It'll just continue forever. Because again, there's no end. There's no point to which America will collapse to, and all of the sudden, everybody will wake up and fight to get our country back. Look at South Africa. Look at Rhodesia. It's now called Zimbabwe. We've seen this one before. We know how it goes, which makes our inability or unwillingness to alter the course that we're on so inexplicable, so baffling, so suspicious. The Rent Guideline Board ignored its own data and made a terrible decision tonight. Old rent-stabilized buildings are already struggling under rising operating costs, yet the board chose to disregard those realities, said James Wellen, president of the Real Estate Board of New York. This decision means less investment in maintenance and repairs, accelerating the deterioration of housing stock that millions of New Yorkers call home. Tonight's vote may be politically popular, but it will make New York's housing crisis worse. Landlords of apartment buildings pay 12.5% in property taxes on a market value determined by the Department of Finance. There are three ways the department can assess the value: based on past sales, based on the cost of replacement, and based on income to expense ratio. For apartment buildings, the department uses the income and expense metric and assesses taxes on 45% of the estimated market value. Insurance costs typically run $300 to $600 per unit, meaning that a 72-unit building, the insurance cost per year could be around $42,000. Mamdani has proposed to address this by creating a city-backed insurance program and has released a request for expression of interest from insurance brokers, captive managers, insurance carriers, and reinsurers, third-party administrators, actual, and risk advisory firms and other entities capable of operating at this scale who want to take this on. So, like, do you see what's happening? Do you understand that they are systematically trying to take over every industry? Like, it's not going to stop here. And the problems that these industries have are not, you know, solved by government. They're caused by government in many cases. The classic example from Mamdani is the fact that there are so many regulations to having a business in New York that it basically makes it impossible for any regular small business to ever get started, let alone succeed. And so instead of removing some of those regulations, instead of trying to make it easier by limiting the amount of government interference in creating a business, they created a new office of the government to help instruct small business owners how to navigate the other offices of government. If there's a problem with the insurance companies, if they're overcharging, if, you know, they're manipulating the market, manipulating the system to unfairly profit from basically products that are required by law for landlords to have, then you can go in and affect change through law about the insurance company. They're not doing that. They want a city-backed insurance company. The city-backed insurance company is going to have a distinct advantage in that they do not need profit. They will constantly be puffed up by taxpayer dollars. Where do you think this ends? Where do you think this cycle burns itself out? Because it's never going to burn itself out, because this is the way communism actually works. They have this ideology. They have these theories. They have these ideas that are wrong, right? So, again, I think everybody knows this. I'm trying to figure out how to explain it succinctly. The most readily apparent example would be like the Holodomor, the mass starvation caused by communists in Ukraine and elsewhere in Eastern Europe. Why did that happen? That happened because the communists were convinced, they were sure, absolutely, that the kulaks, the farmers, were not as efficient as they could be because they weren't communists. They're capitalists. They must be evil. They must be exploiting everybody. Once communists take it over and communize the farms, then we'll actually have a much bigger crop to show for it. So they impose this. They do this. What happens? Is the crop bigger? Of course not. It's significantly worse because they kill the people that actually know how to farm. The people that were actually running the farms at a profit all get slaughtered. Communist commissars go in. They don't know how to farm. So instead of actually having more bountiful harvest, you have less bountiful harvest. How do you think that's treated at the communist headquarters? Do you think they like hearing that the theology undergirding their entire governmental system is abjectly wrong, is just as wrong as it could possibly be? Of course not. So what do? They cover up their failure. They take all of the harvest from everywhere else and add it to the count so they can point to it and go, see, we collectivized the farms and now there's more food than there was before. But they stole it from people that needed it, and then 10 million of people starved. Literally the same thing happened in China. But it was even more ridiculous and outrageous and easily foreseen by anybody that cared to pay attention. So we're going to go into this same process. They're not going to be liquidating the kulaks of New York. They're not going to be collectivizing the farms of New York City, obviously, but the same mentality, the same mindset is there. So they'll, you know, they are convinced that these landlords are just living large off the abuse of their tenants. They're going to take over the buildings, going, we're going to be able to run this so much better. And they're going to succeed. They're going to succeed because no matter how poorly they run the building, the communists in government are going to fill the coffers with money they pilfer elsewhere. They're going to take funds that were meant for something else. They're going to reallocate it to the building insurance city-run operation so it looks like it's succeeding, because that's all that matters to the communists, because to communists, the system is everything. Upholding the system is the only point of their system. So you have to succeed. Even if you don't, you have to make it look like you do, which is a perfect recipe for a downward spiral into chaos and misery. And we have now entered into that spiral. We can interrupt it literally any point. Same thing with the city-owned grocery stores that they want to start running. Are they going to succeed? Of course not. They're going to lose massive amounts of money. But somebody's going to make money. Somebody's going to be raking it in. Somebody's going to be managing the new government program they've built have a $500,000 salary paid for by the taxpayer so they can manage a store that has no incentive to actually be profitable whatsoever? Again, just insane. It just is crazy that we're allowing ourselves to get here. Let's go, if we have time here, to Trump talking about communism. Let's go to clip 33 first. Here's Trump clowning on Democrats for electing communists. Let's watch.
And as you saw with the communists elected in New York City recently, they're communists, they're not social Democrats. They want to completely destroy the traditional American way of life. Communism is very easy to sell. It destroys everything, but it's very easy. I'll be honest. I think I'd be the greatest communist in history. I'd give free rent. Ladies and gentlemen, from now on, you don't have to pay any rent. From now on, anybody wants a house, don't worry about it. Just pick the house you want. Everybody gets free food. Everything is free from this point forward. Everyone's going to vote for me. The problem is, after 2 or 3 years, the country is a disaster area. The country fails. They always do. It always does. So easy to sell. That first year, boy, you're the most popular. It's happening right now in New York and California. But you'll start living in squalor. You'll live in squalor. There will be no food. There will be no housing. There will be no military. There will be no law and order. There will be no nothing. There will be no nothing. You'll be a third world inhabitant in every way, and everyone will suffer or die. You'll suffer or die. That's what happens. For thousands of years, it's been happening by different names. Thousands of years. I'm telling you, I'd be the greatest communist in history. It would be so easy. You wouldn't have to work. You could stay home. The problem is a couple of years go by, the whole place collapses. Always does. Always has.
He's right, of course. He's exactly right. Thing is, that is deeply unconvincing to anybody that might actually vote for socialists. I'm trying to figure out how to handle this, because I appreciate Trump recognizing this threat, but this threat has grown and developed under his watch, and this is not a convincing tack to take. I'll tell you that right now.
Hi folks, Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs. Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
this person that did it is a monster.
Radical district attorneys funded by globalist networks have turned American cities into crime zones with soft-on-crime policy results that innocent civilians have paid with their lives.
5 homicides in 2 weeks. Austin police say the recent string of killings are not connected.
This seems to happen every year. There seems to be usually a week or two where there's just quite a few homicides all in the same time period. These are all very different cases.
Pushback is finally arriving. In Travis County, Texas, DA Jose Garza, elected in 2020 on justice reform, promises of diversion, pretrial releases, and reduced prosecutions, is now under federal scrutiny. The U.S. House Judiciary Committee is demanding documents on his policies that allegedly shield illegal immigrants and undermine law enforcement with a July 7th deadline, but have they missed the mark? After ignoring piles of murder indictments, repeated clashes with police, and a perception of impunity for repeat offenders, Garza's equity experiment has cracked under the weight of stark reality.
Our approach to public safety works, but it flies in the face of right-wing Republican ideology. We have been told for so long that if we want to be safe, that all we need to do is lock up more and more people, particularly people in communities of color and working class communities. And we're told that if we just lock up more people like that, then our communities will be safe. But we know that that's not true.
You're not going to be protected in 800 plus cities and jurisdictions the Democrats run. They're monsters. And so to the globalist, and the same thing's happening in Europe and other areas, you murdered Jamie White. You opened the door. You created the climate. You created the conditions on purpose. George Soros, Alexander Soros, you murdered Jamie White. President Trump needs to point his finger at the Austin scumbag DA and say, you little monster, you are responsible. Jose Garza, just as much as the person or people that murdered our reporter.
And so what we have is a list of cases that may be cases that would have been subject to a 17-151 motion. We have reviewed all of those cases. The overwhelming majority of them were not indicted because the suspect had unmet mental health needs and is receiving mental health services as part of our mental health diversion program.
Garza would argue that there has been a significant drop in 2025 in overall violent crime, but compared to what? Garza increased Austin homicide rates to a record high in his first year, while in Garza's first 2 years, his office dismissed or declined 12,700 felony charges. This pattern isn't a coincidence. It's a coordinated assault on public safety. Compare that disaster to Oakland, California, Soros-backed DA Pamela Price's tenure that brought skyrocketing homicides, brazen thefts, and business exodus through slashed prosecutions and decarceration.
It's hard to be here and not be a little sad if you like sports. Behind us is a cemetery. The Oakland A's, the Oakland Raiders, and Golden State Warriors all used to play right in here. Financial issues in the city, San Francisco, Las Vegas had better offers. You watch Moneyball, I mean, Golden State Warriors, all gone now.
Voters recalled her in a 2024 landslide. Under her replacement, homicides plunged 30 to 33%.
If you called the cops here, how long would it take for them to show up?
Brother, look, you see all these bullet holes in me? I got bullet holes all in my body, bro. You gonna be sitting there. Sometimes, bro, you'll see a motherfucker dead sitting in the middle of the street for hours.
It's stupidly obvious. When you stop treating criminals as victims and start prosecuting them, the streets actually get safer. No root causes willy-nilly pandering, just results. With Congress now focusing on Garza, Travis County could follow Oakland's path before more blood is shed. The Soros House of Cards is buckling. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
There is a war. It's happening now.
It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I know we got another video here of Trump talking about communism. And again, it is good to see him talking about communism. It's honestly kind of weird to me, considering the fact that growing up, communism was like a literal joke. We used to make skits. And we always made the bad guys communists because it just sounded funny. Like, look out, a communist. It's like, oh, what is this, the 1950s? But I think that's symptomatic of how we've gotten here. I think we've let our guard down and allowed a bunch of literal communists to insinuate themselves into our power structures. And now it's a very real threat. And, of course, we've talked endlessly about this, the fact that communism requires there to be capitalistic abuse for them to have an argument to make in the first place. So this isn't even, you can't just fix this by demonizing communism. You have to actually provide a viable path towards a better life for your people. Because right now, the only ones making an argument are the communists. So you can talk about how they're going to live in squalor, but a lot of them live in squalor right now, so they're willing to take the risk. They don't care. They maybe don't recognize, or I mean, really, they just don't care. They just don't care. And on top of all of this is the racial aspect, is that this isn't just an ideologically driven communism. This is a mix of all of these poisonous ideologies. It's the anti-whiteism that is inextricably tied to communism. Now, again, this is the success of the brainwashing of the powers that be, who, as we've explained the entire time, were demonizing white people because they want to demonize the things that white people came up with and created and invented and defined ourselves by. If you want to destroy freedom, you got to destroy the founding fathers. You want to destroy people's ability to resist you, you need to destroy the Constitution. You want to destroy the Constitution, you have to undermine the people that wrote the Constitution, so they demonize them as white slavers. And so therefore the Constitution must be bad. How could such evil people ever come up with something good? It's not really that sophisticated, but it's extremely effective. And I just wonder, I mean, how serious are we taking this threat? Because there are about 10 million things that the Trump administration could be doing to mitigate this threat. They're not doing it. And the people on the right, like Ben Shapiro, are coming to the exactly wrong conclusions about who is responsible for this. He blames the election of socialists on white people, when white people are the only demographic that doesn't vote majority for socialism, and that includes Jews. So let's go to Ben Shapiro. As you know, you tell me what's you tell me what you think is motivating him. He seems to be sincerely in fear of Zoran Mamdani. He seems to genuinely be concerned about the way New York is going and the way people are voting for Democrats, and for specifically Democratic Socialists. The question is, if he was genuine about that, because he certainly seems genuine, if he really was, why would he be lying about it? Why would he be distracting from it? Why would he be blaming people that aren't to blame for it? Does he really care? I don't know, actually. Here's what Ben Shapiro said about the socialist sweep that occurred in New York earlier this week.
Who's leading all of this? Who's leading all of this? Who is the DSA? As we pointed out, it is overeducated, useless white people. Some of them are white, some of them are not. But bottom line is, this professional, disproportionately white, the professional useless class, they've been manufactured over the last 20, 30, 40 years in university classrooms. They've been majoring in absolute junk. They're unemployable losers who have never held a real job, but they did go to the best colleges for years and then more years, and then they can't get real jobs. So they end up as community organizers or agitators or political aides for crappy candidates who hate the country. The Democratic Socialists of America is a make-work machine for college-educated losers. That's what it is.
You're kind of failing to, you know, hold down that seething hatred for white people you have there, Ben. Democracy is the theory that the common people know what they want and deserve to get it good and hard. Great. Can we, I just want to look up a few things. As far as I know, pretty sure the DSA is like completely non-white. I'm pretty sure. Like, I first heard about it because it was like Cenk Uygur putting it together. He's not white. Should we do some investigation? Crew, can you search who founded the DSA? Maybe who runs them right now? I just want to see. He could be right. Could be white people. Of course, white people are not the majority at colleges these days. They're certainly not the majority of professors. The majority of professors are, you know, vicious communists for the most part. And any attempt we make to rein in the university system seems always hamstrung by Jews for the most part. I mean, if you really think about, you know, all the ideologies that Ben Shapiro is raging against and saying or so. I mean, not all of them, obviously. How did he put it? You know, worthless white people, whatever he said. White people are under an attack consistently. A 25-person national political committee, like a Soviet. Some sort of Bolshevik organization. Who are the Bolsheviks? Do you know? The co-chair is a South Asian descent, multiracial face. Megan Romer is white. The National Political Committee, the NPC, they call themselves the NPC. Okay. The NPC include Black, Latino, Asian, and Middle Eastern members alongside white members. Structural diversity rule. To ensure representation, the DSA Constitution mandates at least 20% of the NPC slots must be reserved for people of color. They have specific identity-based caucuses. I mean, the whole damn thing is anti-white. The whole damn thing is about destroying white people. How many statements did Zoran Mamdani or his lieutenants make? The woman who is now in charge of the rent stabilization program is Sia Weaver, who's the one saying private property is an aspect of white supremacy and that we have to destroy white supremacy by getting rid of private property. Zoran Mamdani put out official literature in his campaign saying we're going to tax the wealthy white people and give it to non-white people. Ben Shapiro looks at this coalition of anti-white psychopaths motivated by racial hatred. And he says, this is white people's fault. This is white people's fault. In a way, it kind of is. In a way, it is. Because we've let people like Ben Shapiro pretend that they're white. He hates white people, actually. And doesn't hide it very well, I guess you could say. Of course, the hypocrisy abounds. It's not exactly new. NYC mayor, bring up that headline for me. NYC Mayor Mom Donnie defends tenant official after backlash over white supremacy post. Yes, no, she literally thinks private property is white supremacy. I wonder, was it white people that told her that? Was it white people that came up with that theory exactly, I wonder? Or was it Jewish people? I kind of like Ben Shapiro being anti-white. It sort of gives me license to return the favor. It's kind of cool. I kind of like it. The hypocrisy, of course, abounds. Homeowner bashing Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier's father is a landlord and rents his Miami condo for $1,750 a month. Daria Chevalier once called for the government to seize all property from landlords, but her own father is currently renting a Florida condo out for $1,750 a month, the Post has learned. Yeah, I don't know if you're surprised by this, but you should not be. The whole point of the communist system is that the communist rulers do not abide by the restrictions that they impose on everybody else. There is nothing unique or surprising about this, okay? And they have their own self-fulfilling way of rationalizing it within their system. You know, we talked about it a lot when the more communistic members of the American government were violating their own rules during COVID. And at the time, they would make the same justification. I'd always point it out, like Nancy Pelosi. She's like, well, everybody else has to, you know, their salons have to be shut down. They can't go out and get their hair done and their makeup done. But see, she's going on TV and she has to try to sell the system of lockdowns. So in order to fulfill her role upholding the system, then she has to have access to the stuff to make her look good. Otherwise, she's not going to look good on TV. It's not going to be as convincing if she's not, you know, all made up in the way that she normally is. You can't have a raggedy looking person out there, you know, promoting something and having authority. So, you know, she needs to look good. She needs, for the system, for the sake of the party, you know, it's not like she is just taking advantage of the fact that she can ignore the laws that she imposes on everybody else. It's that she's burdened by the responsibility of being the face of the party, and therefore she's required to take advantage of this position. She is obligated to do things that are forbidden to the average person. Like, there's an internal logic to this that makes sense to them, the absolute ghouls. That's how it works. It's like, well, I'm running this big system that's saving everybody. Communism will save everybody. Therefore, anything I do, you know, pushing communism is therefore justified. So, you know, nobody should have millions of dollars, but if I want to go toe-to-toe with these industrial magnates, I mean, don't I need to be able to walk in their shoes? Don't I need to be able to meet them on the ground where they're at? So, I mean, for me, I don't want it or anything, but I guess I am going to have a private plane. Shoot, darn it. Darn it. I mean, I know I'm going to keep all of you in abject poverty, but, you know, I'm trying to support the system here. I'm trying to be a representative for the communist solution that will save everybody, so I'm going to have a nice three-piece suit and I'm going to have to be driven around. I mean, the work I'm doing for our system is so important. I can't be required to adhere to all of the rules that I'm imposing on others. I mean, it's inevitable that this is the way that it goes. It's like Bernie Sanders going from talking about the millionaires to the billionaires as soon as he became a millionaire. But again, I don't think they care. I don't think the voters care. I really don't. I think they agree with the reasoning. I think they feel like Zoran Mamdani is some sort of rough and tumble fighter for them, which he's obviously not. He is from an ultra wealthy Ugandan family that still resides on a gigantic compound in Uganda. They are like the elite of the elite, just like Ilhan Omar's family was involved in the slave trade until very recently, and her father was like second in command in Somalia when they were there. Like, these are not regular people. These are not peasants by any means. These are just foreign elites coming over here and destroying our system by appealing to both their co-ethnics, the other immigrants that have come from overseas and don't actually love America or want to, you know, build our country with us. And yet, you know, they love it if AOC shows up at the Met Gala in a $50,000 dress, a $100,000 dress. They don't care. They don't care. It doesn't work to them to go, oh, this person thinks that, you know, Hassan Piker is like the best example. He's like the number one hardcore socialist communist. I mean, he literally is like, you should kill landlords, let the streets run wet, red with their blood. Like, he's as far out there as you can get. Of course, he is a multimillionaire that lives in a multimillion dollar house and is constantly brought up as if it matters to them, as if they care. They don't care. The followers don't care. The people doing it don't care. You know, you can call them hypocrites all you want. They don't care. So I don't either. And again, you got to recognize genuinely how much of this is just straight up racial envy. It could be close to damn near 100%. From Christina Pushaw, Mamdani's origin story was that he was rejected by white girls in college. Daria Lisa's origin story is rejected by black and Arab men who prefer white women. I'm sensing a theme here. So in an article for the Bowdoin Orient, Mamdani discussed his personal experience with race and feelings of isolation, writing, "While I am now comfortable in my own skin, I can remember wishing for whiteness my first year, when I thought certain type of girls were impossible to talk to due to my skin being more kiwi than peach." So you think you ever got over that? You think he ever got over being rejected by white women? He doesn't say that exactly, but that is what he's saying, 100%. Now, this woman put out an article, put out a tweet, saying, you know, black men and Arab men agree on fetishizing uglier colonizer women. Okay, she means beautiful white women, but she has to try to insult white women by calling them ugly. Are you sensing a theme here? Are you sensing a theme that the radical immigrant socialists are genuinely, in fact, motivated by simple, childish racial hatred and a feeling of impotence and envy of white people? I think this motivates way more in the world than we want to acknowledge. I don't know why we can't. I don't even know how to talk about it myself. I mean, we have talked about it before quite a bit, but like, why do you think foreign men are moving into Europe by the millions? Why do you think they're coming to America by the millions? Because white women are the best, are the most beautiful, are the most desirable, are also, by the way, the most liberal, the most open, because, and this is a key point here, we have a Christian society that allows such things. Elsewhere, they do not, right? This was a tweet I saw, or I think I retweeted it, of somebody saying what specifically white women don't realize, don't seem to be able to get through their heads, is like wearing a bikini, going around in skin-tight shorts. That is only possible because we are a Christian nation. And so our people don't try to rape you, but like, you can't do that in other countries, which, by the way, is one of the reasons I think there's a lot of, you know, effects that this has. And one of them is that you almost have to become more like them, right? There's a article last week about European women converting to Islam. And it's like, well, it's because they, one thing, gravitate towards feelings of safety. And obviously the Muslims can inflict violence on anybody they want in Europe and nothing's ever done about it. And so they feel like if they were a part of Islam, then maybe they would be protected. But it's also the fact that, you know, if you as a woman, a pretty woman, are walking around constantly getting harassed and propositioned and pinched and whatever else by a bunch of leering perverts, then it probably is a comfort to put a hood over your head and become invisible to them. Like, it almost forces it. In the same way, it's like in Middle Eastern countries, you can't go out without a male relative, and increasingly so in European countries as well. Not because it's a religious imperative or a law that women can't go out, but because women out on their own get attacked. So you gotta have a man with you, just so you don't get attacked. We don't have that in America because we're white and Christian. And I just don't understand how white women don't understand, because to a large degree they don't. And it's like somebody walking around with a treasure chest full of gold. And you're like, you know, somebody might want to steal that. And they're like, how dare you? I can flaunt my gold wherever I want. It's like, okay, but somebody's going to steal it from you. Somebody's going to take it from you. Do you not understand that you are a precious pearl? You're a precious gem that is like, what? How do you not realize what a prize you are, and how people from all over the world are like, have hatred for you just because you exist and aren't with them, and have hatred for white men because we do get white women. Like, again, I don't have like a really sophisticated, you know, theory on this. I just think it's obvious that a huge portion of the anti-white hatred is literally born from just unadulterated envy of white people. And I've played you clips before that illustrate it. Sometimes you get people who are honest about it, and that's exactly what they say. So Brad Lander, who was elected in New York, is in a bureau or a borough or a district that is only 40% white, with 28% being foreign born. 41% of his constituents do not speak English at home. Clara Valdez won in New York 7. Her district was only 37% white, 33% foreign born, with 52% not speaking English at home, meaning that whoever they're counting as white is likely white Hispanic. Daria Lisa Avila Chevalier in New York, her district was only 15% white, 35% foreign born, 55% don't speak English at home. So I wasn't even reading that correctly. I was thinking, you know, immigrant families, but no, that's 35% foreign born. So that doesn't even include the, you know, second generation that still speak their home language, their birth language at home. Disproportionate white libs opened the door decades ago, but we're feeling the effects now. We're in a new phase now. It's not stupid college kids. It's third world immigrants and their children voting to take your stuff away. Let me read that again. Disproportionately, white libs opened the doors decades ago, but we're feeling the effects now. We're in a new phase now. It's not stupid college kids. It's third world immigrants and their children voting to take your stuff away. That's all it is. That's it. That's the entirety. That's the whole thing. Oh, you just have to stop them. There's no arguing about it. There's no genuine philosophical, ideological, you know, drive they're pushing towards that is resolute and uncompromising. They don't really believe in anything. They don't really care. Communism is at this point the best method by which they can take over America and dominate white people. So that's what they're doing. It's not that complicated. It's not that sophisticated. It's just we're being taken over, replaced, dominated. That's it. Simple.
Years ago, I said, I want something that supercharges methylene blue.
Yes.
I want something that gives people natural clean energy without stimulants. And you got together with top formulators and created Methyl Drive and Power Plant. They can individually be taken.
Yes.
Or they can be stacked together with methylene blue. You understand all the science. I always butcher all the names. I don't explain how these are the perfect formulas.
Sure.
I've had top formulators say, who made these formulas? These are the best. These are available at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds our operation. You develop these with top formulators. These are great, already best-selling products without me even promoting them. Tell us about Power Plant and Methyl Drive right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we've got hundreds of thousands of people that have taken ultramethylene blue since we started selling it on the alexjonesstore.com. This is an incredible product. This is a super powerful metabolic ingredient. Methylene blue's structure, you have nitrogen, 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 sulfur, chlorine. The chlorine is what gives it its dye properties. That's why it's used as a medical dye, medical grade, what we have. The sulfur donates an electron to your mitochondrial process. So what that means is it speeds it up through the Krebs cycle to what makes where it makes more energy, and the energy that it makes more efficiently. So you get less waste product, more energy, more ATP. That's why it's a super powerful nootropic.
It skips something in the mitochondria.
It skips the oxidization process in the cells. It skips through the Krebs cycle from stage 1 into stage 4 oxidative phosphorylation. Nothing else does this.
That's the ultimate antioxidant.
The ultimate antioxidant. That's ultramethylene blue. Now, the key to human health, this is what's being discovered, is mitochondrial health, right? 20th century, they try to treat symptoms and keep you alive. 21st century, it's all the people you watched on Rogan over the years proven to be correct. It's about the mitochondria. It's about cell division. It's about senescent cells and their waste products that they make. Methyl Drive, there's that iconic ad of you, Dad, where you go, the CoQ10, the PQQ. That is what this is. CoQ10, PQQ, magnesium, and then methylcobalamin, the ultimate vitamin B12 in the bioavailable form. That's all together in Methyl Drive. It's about protecting your mitochondria. We've got tons of ingredients in there to do that in Methyl Drive. With Power Plant as well, people report this almost universally with the methylene blue. Incredible energy, incredible resilience, incredible endurance. What I wanted to create with Power Plant, we kind of have the ultimate cellular engine thing in Methyl Drive. With Power Plant, this is kind of the men and women can both take it. It's like a unisex super male vitality, where you have things in here like the cordyceps mushroom that boosts oxygen carrying capacity and ATP, which is also phenomenal for the mitochondria, plus the Rhodiola roja, also known as Viking root or golden root. But even more so than that, it lowers your cortisol. And when you lower your cortisol, studies have shown that your testosterone increases because they're made from the same building block, which is cholesterol. Of course, that's why ashwagandha is so incredible. You saw that product as well. It takes the fuel source from making cortisol into making testosterone. Since they're both hormones, we got zinc in here as well to raise testosterone, help with healthy testosterone, selenium to do the same thing. And then we've got the boron, which is so underrated.
Nobody ever talks about that.
No one ever talks about boron. You can look at all these different male vitality supplements. If you're a wife out there, you want to get something for your husband, Power Plant, Adaptogen Complex, we got Methyl Drive. These really are made to be taken in tandem. This is a trifecta. Yeah, this is the Mac Daddy stack. Okay, you want to be a Mac Daddy, you buy Power Plant, Methyl Drive, and Methylene Blue. Okay.
We have the Power Plant bundle discounted. Power Plant, yes. Methyl Drive, and Methylene Blue together right now at thealexjonesstore.com. It really is amazing, and it funds the operation. You're going to be addicted if you get it.
You guys really need to get this. If you're looking for a physical improvement, a mental improvement, that Power Plant formula combined with the Methyl Drive and the Methylene Blue, but any one of these taken separately, if you're older and you get the Methyl Drive, you are going to love this product. If you're younger and you're big into exercise, you're going to love the Power Plant. I'm really impressed with this. I'm thankful Bigly let me develop these products. Nobody has taken this and given me a bad review. Nobody has taken this and given me a bad review. And combined together with the Methylene Blue, it's a deal that's too good to be true.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Back, folks. So Ben Shapiro blames the success of the Democratic Socialists of America on white people. It's kind of offensive, quite frankly, especially the way that he used the term. You can sense the anti-whiteism. You know, he tries to conceal it, but it evinces itself regardless. And again, I'm kind of glad to see him just come out and say it this way. Can we play it again? I want to hear the disdain with which he, how do you say, worthless white people, something like that. Can we hear it again?
Who's leading all of this? Who's leading all of this? Who is the DSA? As we pointed out, it is overeducated, useless white people.
Overeducated, useless Jews. Okay. I just want to make sure I'm using terms that aren't offensive. And I know if Ben Shapiro used it, it's certainly not offensive. Because, you know, far be it from him to ever insult white people. So, sorry, overeducated, useless Jews. That's a term I can use? Great. Wonderful. I'll use it. I'll take it. As pointed out by Bumbadum, Bumbadum14 on X, in response, of course, to Ben Shapiro. Now he's crying about the effect of his desire. He says, by the way, I don't give a damn about the so-called browning of America. Color doesn't matter. Ideology does. To which Bumbadum responds, neocons and Jews like Ben Shapiro spent the last 10 to 20 years calling any conservative that bemoaned legal and illegal immigration as a racist and would laugh at any claim that assimilation wouldn't happen. It's about culture, not race, they would say. Now, 20 years later, every major metro in America has been ethnically transformed into a Lovecraftian ball of mystery meat mass, only bound by their never-ending resentment and hatred of whites. The irony, of course, is that this ball of meat that Jean Raspail could never come close to describing isn't capable of the nuance to delineate whites from Jews. The end result is the DSA taking footholds among the American left in those minority-majority communities where campaigns are exclusively run on anti-white politics and, ironically, anti-Jew politics. So what did Jews like and neocons like Ben Shapiro learn? Well, nothing, of course. That's why he defaults to blaming whites when the reality is that these districts are less than 20% white and all the campaign material is anti-white grievance politics to satiate race communism, the bottom 2% of humanity. Okay? Of course, we don't have to hear from him. We can go to clip number 11 here. This is a rabbi, Joshua Stanton, again, explaining the reasoning and purpose behind this. Let's watch.
In America today, we have white supremacy. In the Torah, we had Amalek. Amalek is seen as the eternal enemy of our people, whose members found strength by making us suffer. Therefore, when the Lord your God grants you safety from all your enemies around you, and the land that the Lord your God is giving to you as a hereditary portion, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. Our rabbinic sages parse these sentences and derive two distinct meanings. Blotting out the memory of Amalek is a military command, literally to destroy Amalek. Now facing today's Amalek, we are reminded that the Torah calls us not just to escape, but to extirpate Amalek. We are commanded to do real and literal battle against it. That means coming off the bench in the fight against white supremacy. It means putting our reputations and our money and our physical bodies on the line. But also so that we are ready to answer people with radically destructive and incoherent versions of history. So that we can counter white supremacists. So that we can counter Amalek and blot them out by retaining on our lips and in our records their history. By being bearers of history, we can help guide the future. Blotting out Amalek need not merely be about military conquest. Equally important is ideological victory. And nothing could more readily counter white supremacy than a Jewish community proudly helping our Muslim neighbors. There is nothing that undermines a white supremacist worldview more than diverse communities getting along and building together towards the future.
And then once we get exactly what we want and it blows up in our stupid faces, we'll blame the white people for letting us do it. We'll blame the white college-age women for believing their professors who we taught and instructed in exactly what I just laid out. So what's the problem again? Where's the problem again, Ben? Are you not destroying Amalek? Is that not your purpose? Now, this video, this post has gone totally viral. It's from 4chan all the way back in 2021, but it's even more accurate now than it was then. It's got some pretty spicy language. I'll try to clean it up a little bit, but I think it's interesting. I'm saying I necessarily agree with it, but it's certainly a point of view. He says, I'm a Jew. Jew here. Have you ever played a video game where the AI just sat there and did nothing while you took it apart methodically? We won in a game nobody else was playing because they did not think anyone was stupid enough to do so. Our victory? We killed our host. The survivors will hate us. The blacks will eat us because we look white. The Muslims will exterminate us the moment our goy slaves become too weak to protect us. Not to mention we're giving Muslims nuclear weapons by giving them France and England. Our daughters miscegenate or are whores. My favorite niece married a Jewish black guy who was 20 years older than her. Lived in a Jewish black neighborhood. Her house was the only one that did not look like crap because she tried. Ended up divorced with a half black kid. Breaks my heart. Brother is incel, can't find a wife because all women are whores. Almost all the men in the extended family are ruined, either marrying roasties or failing to marry at all. And why? Because the weapons we set on the goy cattle also affect us. So yay, we won by default because nobody else was dumb enough to try for a game of let's destroy civilization. Our victory is such that our host species is going extinct due to our actions, and the only two paths forward are one, whites finally wake up and kill us all, two, whites finally die out and black people eat us for being white. Great victory, you idiots. I did miss one. I tried to block them all out. Yeah, look, like I said, I didn't write this. I don't necessarily agree. This is very vitriolic, very angry. The man needs Jesus, I think. I have the solution. I sense a very hateful undercurrent from these statements. But I can't disagree with the conclusion. I mean, it certainly seems like white people are going extinct, and I don't know what the plan is after that. I mean, you got people like this jokester rabbi over here talking about white people are all Amalek and they have to be blotted out. You're white, dumbass, at least according to the people you're using to carry this out. Did nobody think about this? Nobody thought about this, huh? Interesting. It's a little bit infuriating. It's a little bit exhausting having to go through all of this. And again, it's not just that they are voting for communists and, like, the Democrats just simply understand now. You know, it's like the videos that we show. Hell, there's another one out today. There's a new video from the stabbing of Henry Novak. And it's got the knifeman lying to police, saying he wasn't stabbed, and saying that, you know, the kid just hurled racial abuse at him. And it's like he knows the police are going to believe him. Or, you know, any of the videos that we showed one yesterday of the black guy fighting the white guy, and the cop runs up and holds the white guy's arms down while he's getting punched in the face. And it's like they know they can get away with it. They know there's not going to be any consequence. They know that there's no punishment, and that's the only reason that they would not do something. Again, I believe genuinely every single human being can, if given the right incentive and if instructed correctly, if actually indoctrinated into a beneficial and universal worldview like Christianity, I genuinely believe everybody can come to understand second order effects and the purpose of self-reliance and self-containment. Like, you don't need somebody to punish you to do the right thing. You should be able to do it on your own. And I genuinely believe every human being of every race, color, and creed is capable of understanding that. But a lot of them don't. But a lot of them refuse to and have no reason to. So when it comes to someone like Zohran Mamdani, or any Democrat for that matter, they have absolutely, like, they don't believe in our system. So they're not just going to be like, well, if I don't behave, then our system goes down. They don't like our system. They want our system to go down. That's not a motivation for them. Oh, well, you got to do the right, you know, we're all in this together. They don't see it that way. They see us as two distinct populations. And whenever you do worse, they're doing better. Like, it, you know, it's a zero sum mindset that they operate on, a dog eat dog mindset that we're being infiltrated with. So when Zohran Mamdani becomes mayor of New York City and gets invited to the White House and pat on the head by Donald Trump, he's really feeling confident. He's feeling so confident, the day that the Supreme Court decision about temporary protected status came out, the day it came out, he put out a statement saying that he would not be adhering to it, which, if you watched the show yesterday, basically what I spent the entire show on, the fact that it does not matter what the Supreme Court says because these people don't care, won't listen to it, and aren't punished. So they're going to keep doing that. And we played the videos of the DEI operators. And they're like, yeah, the Supreme Court said we're not allowed to, but nobody came to talk to me about it. Nobody from the authorities came and made me do it. So I'm just going to pretend to be ignorant to it. So it's really, really really not that complicated, folks. If you have somebody like Zoran Mamdani coming out and saying, the Supreme Court decided one thing, the federal government says one thing, but I'm deciding another because I'm mayor of a city, the appropriate reaction is to deport him. That's it. It's like, that's what you just have to do. And you have to look around at all the other mayors, go, anybody else want to not do what you're obligated legally to do? No? You're all falling into line? Great. Wonderful. That's how it'll work. But instead, they're pushing the boundaries. They're pushing the limits. They're seeing what they can get away with. They're sort of A and B testing their most extreme policies. And they're doing it at a increasing clip, at a more rapid rate as time goes on. Just in the last few days, I've seen Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, Jayapal, and Mamdani all openly espousing their desire to either end the Electoral College and or pack the Supreme Court. And like, it's, they're going to destroy everything because nobody is stopping them. It's not legal what they're doing. It is not up to the mayor of New York City whether or not to comply with federal immigration law. It's just not. Will we do anything about it, or will we let them get away with it? Because so far, every time something like this has come up, we've let them get away with it. And this is true whether it's the fraud in Minnesota or the ICE attacks on ICE facilities and the protest that got two people killed because they were physically attacking ICE officers while they were trying to arrest dangerous criminals. And every time, what happens? The Democrats get what they want. They burn down cities for George Floyd. They get the policies they're demanding. They go out and attack ICE officers. ICE officers retreat and let the illegal immigrants stay. Zoran Mamdani promises to protect the invaders that no longer have temporary protected status. Is anything going to happen about that? Is anything going to happen? Are you actually going to punish him for that? Because if not, I don't want to hear you talking about communism. Like, Donald Trump is out there making statements about the danger of communism, how he's waited his whole life to fight communism, how he's prepared for this, and he understands the you know, real stakes of this combat. And it's like, if you did, then you wouldn't have deported 10 million people by now, because that's what's bringing the communism to this country. You would have deported Zoran Mamdani, because he is in blatant, incontrovertible, undeniable violation of his visa conditions. He is publicly avowed and participated in activities with communist organizations. As an immigrant, he swore an oath to not do that. He did it. You can deport him. Why aren't we? Why aren't we? Why aren't we doing that? Can Ben Shapiro tell me? Is it white people? I don't think it is. And the good news is white people are getting over the fear. White people are very much getting over the fear. And the thing is, whether it's anti-Semitism or racism or whatever else it is, would you people just listen to me? Like, would you just listen to Alex Jones and myself? Because we have been fighting this stuff as aggressively as anybody. White people especially have this thing where they will be completely blind, completely deaf, completely openly reject anything that they even think might get close to anti-Semitism. Then something will happen. A switch will get flipped. A light bulb goes off. And they go from, you know, 100% Israel first, how dare you, you know, threaten our greatest ally, to like, have you heard about this Hitler guy? He's actually really smart. And it's like, we don't need to jump from extreme to extreme. We don't need to go from, oh, well, white people are all evil, to actually we should kill all the non-white people. It's like, can we just stick with classic Americana? Can we just stick with genuine equality under the law? That's all we need. That's all we require. If we just get rid of the anti-white crap, get rid of the immigration crap that is predicated on being anti-white and trying to get rid of white supremacy by literally breeding white people out of existence. Can we just maintain a universal standard of behavior and just stick with that and understand, like, cause it's almost like people fall for the belief that, like, not hating white people is white supremacy. So they're like, I guess I'm a white supremacist. It's like, no, you can just not hate white people. And you shouldn't hate white people. And nobody of any race should hate white people. Because nobody of any race should hate any other race. This is actually the true belief. This is actually reality. And so I'm, like, kind of worried, because what's going to happen is people are just going to go all the way to the other end of the spectrum. And it's going to, you know, ruin everything, basically. When if you can just, like, everything I say on air, like, maybe some people would want to portray it as bigoted in one way or another. But there's nothing I've ever said on this show, on anything, that I would not show to any Jewish person, or any black person, any Hispanic person, any Muslim person. Because what I'm saying is true. Because I genuinely don't hate anybody. And because what I'm pointing out, if I am criticizing these groups, is these groups themselves predicating their actions on their group identity, which makes it therefore a valid target of criticism. But I'm a little bit worried. But I'm a little bit worried that people don't have the subtlety necessary to discuss this stuff. And that while an awakening is happening of racial consciousness on white people's side, if it goes too far, if people genuinely embrace the idea that, like, I guess white people are supreme and should rule over everybody else, and we have to kill them before they kill us. Like, if we take the Jewish-Israeli mindset of just, like, we're under constant threat, we have to kill, like, it's just not gonna go well for anybody. And it's going to drive a lot of people away who, yeah, maybe they look around and go, gee, white people sure are discriminated against. But if every white person talking about that is a genuine dyed-in-the-wool offensive racist, like, they're gonna reject you because people in general, white people in particular, very nice. We really are nice. We really don't want to offend anybody. We really don't want to be bigoted against anybody. Which again is like, you go online and people think that you just need to, like, you know, Alex will play the clips of that handsome truth guy. Like, that is such a ineffective and really has a contrary effectiveness to what you're trying to do. And not because, you know, I mean, in a way, people are kind of brainwashed, but for the most part, most Americans, they're just ignorant. They just don't know. And they're just good people. And they just don't want to offend anybody. And they just don't want to insult anybody. And they treat others as they like to be treated. And they like their religion, so why wouldn't you like yours? And, hey, we're all just human beings here. Like, that's how they really feel. So when they hear you saying something offensive about a race or a religion or anything else, they reject it internally. Like, it's not an external force that's stopping them from accepting the truth you're yelling at them. It can be your own style of doing it. Maybe I'm not always as effective as maybe I could be in making these arguments, but I like to think, and I know for a fact that I have, you know, regular viewers, regular listeners of every race, color, and creed who agree with me on pretty much everything. Maybe every once in a while. I had a guy the other day that was, like, saying I was driving away conservative Muslims for some reason. But, like, look, I'm just telling the truth and I'm just being honest. And by the way, I genuinely find it offensive that you would expect me to not oppose you. Do you understand? Like, if I were to, you know, I just always use Japan, but really you can use any other country. But if I want to move to Mongolia and the Mongolians are like, we don't want you here. We don't want Europeans here. We don't want white people. We don't want Christians. This is our country. Like, I cannot put myself in the mindset that would even be offended at that, let alone outraged, let alone, you know, like, this is the worst thing in the world. It is such a foreign mindset to me this idea of like, and that's what happens. When I was talking to Sneeko a couple months ago, it was the same type of thing where he kept being like, yeah, but don't you, you know, like Muslims are only 1%. It's just like, why are you trying to get me to be like, no, yeah, you could take over my country, actually. Actually, I'm bad for wanting foreigners with diametrically opposed beliefs to me to not be in my country. Like, no, I'm an American. I'm a human being. I'm a Christian. I'm a white person. I'm going to defend my people, and I would expect you to do the same. And the fact that you're offended that I'm doing that is not real. It's just that you have no other debate tactic. So you want to try to weaponize white guilt in your favor. I don't have white guilt. I don't need white guilt. No, thank you. I've tried it. It's not for me. And the thing about this that, I don't know, I feel like an extra obligation, like a burden to do this, because I know a lot of people, like, listen, folks, God bless a lot of people on the right, but a lot of them have never been around minorities. It's just like the truth. And you can just kind of tell from the way they talk about it. And it's true on the left wing too, obviously. Most white people that are most vehemently pro-diversity live in the whitest places. But like, you know, I hate to say it. If you grew up in Idaho, like, I don't know how much experience you have talking to Jewish people or black people or living around them. I was always a minority from elementary school on. White people were not the majority of people I was around. And I've been to a lot of Jewish organizations, Jewish holidays. I mean, it's like I have a lot of experience around a lot of non-white people, and I grew up that way. So to me, it's like, you know, I genuinely do think it's like a sort of weird reverse, like, oh, I'm white, so I don't want to make them feel bad. You know, like, oh, I can't advocate for white people because then the poor black and Hispanics will feel so bad about not being white or something. I don't know what the mindset is, but I grew up in inner city Houston where it's just like, there's just a fact of life and you just stand up for yourself because everybody does. And you understand that black people are people that have agency, that make decisions. You don't have to coddle them. You don't have to treat them like they're babies that need white people to build them up and, you know, provide everything for them. You can hold them to account, actually. Actually, you can not treat them as something way over there that you never interact with, but, oh, care so much about. If you actually cared about them, maybe you'd get to know them. And if you actually got to know them, maybe you wouldn't treat them like they're not human. So I don't know. We got to get over it. We got to get over it, white people. You're not special. You're not in charge anymore. You're not even the majority anymore. Stop feeling sorry for these people. Defend yourself.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one. Very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 Free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 Years of Freedom. They designed that. Very clean. Very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. it's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. The UN this week came out with a report saying that Israel deliberately killed Palestinian children, resulting in genocide. This has been a very difficult pill to swallow for the people committing the genocide. Apparently, they're surprised by this. It's kind of shocking. Very interestingly, they're really having trouble trying to spin this one. It's not so easy. The Jerusalem Post feels the need to note that, sure, they may have killed a lot of kids, but it's worth noting that the UN report considers a child to be every human being below the age of 18 years. So, I mean, you know how, you know, it's like, yes, that's right. Children. Yes. Yeah. No, that's what we're saying. Like that's the level they're resorting to is like, well, they said we killed a bunch of kids, but like, you know that they consider kids to be anyone that is, you know, younger than an adult. So, you know, how trustworthy is the UN really? Yeah, great point, Israel. I didn't think of it that way. Let's go to this video. This is Piers Morgan talking to John Spencer about the rate of civilian deaths in combatants in Gaza. Let's watch.
But do you John, do you believe that the ratio of civilian deaths to enemy combatant terrorist deaths in Gaza, for example, is the best ratio, if you like, that we've seen in modern warfare? Is that your belief?
And so I stated that early in the war when there were people doing false comparative analysis.
But do you still believe that about Gaza?
Absolutely.
Okay, so my question for you is very simple then.
It's aggregated.
Okay, but my question for you is very simple.
Pierce, what is the...
No, but hang on, John. Let me finish my question. I will let you answer. I will let you answer, but because you said that, let me just give you my question, which is this.
Sure.
To make that assessment, you would have to know how many civilians have been killed, wouldn't you?
Yep.
So how many is it?
So I take both the numbers that we all have available. Mm. I don't filter them through some prism of intentionality and already.
But no pro-Israeli guest has been able to tell me the numbers. So maybe you can enlighten everybody. How many civilians have been killed in Gaza?
Sure. So I take the Hamas number that they provide, which doesn't distinguish between civilian and combatants. And then I take the one that Israel provides. I have done enough research on all the numbers of any urban battle to understand when do we have a number and then how is it determined.
Sure. So how many civilians have been killed?
According to Hamas, 72,000.
And what is your belief?
My belief is that we don't have a number, but if we take Hamas's number and then we compare it to Israel's numbers of combatants, how many fighters do you think Hamas has got?
Let's take the Israel number of combatants. So I've asked Israeli ambassadors how many civilians have been killed. They can always tell me how many Hamas have been killed.
That's right.
But they can never tell
me how many civilians have died.
Oddly, they can never tell me how many civilians have been killed. So my simple question for you is to make the assessment that the ratio has never been better than it is in Gaza in terms of combatants killed compared to civilians, you'd have to know both numbers. You have to, right? So my question, again, is simple. How many civilians have actually been killed in Gaza?
So that would be a question.
You don't know.
So when people talk about how many civilians have died, you just started the show talking about an indiscriminate number, a high number of civilians. You too don't have access to information to know that that body.
No, but you're the one making the claim that the ratio is the best we've seen. I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think it's unreasonable, John, in that context of that claim to simply ask you that obviously to make that assessment, you must know how many civilians have been killed and how many Hamas terrorists have been killed. If you don't know, I don't know how you can make the assessment.
I mean, I guess you could challenge the qualitative analysis of any war in the history of war.
I'm only asking you about your claim. You said it was the best ratio, and yet I'm simply asking you, okay, so what is the ratio? How many civilians? How many Hamas?
No.
I'm trying to explain to you the quality.
Yeah, that's not how this works, Piers. Now, see, they make absurd statements. They make absurd just declarations. And then you're supposed to accept that. There's no follow-up questions for them to justify it. Just accept. Believe.
Let me announce the kickoff of the summer sale. This is going to run for 2 weeks, and different items for only 3 days will be buy one, get one free. Right now, it's Ultra Methylene Blue, the very best methylene blue. You've heard about methylene blue. Ours is medical grade. Buy one, get one free. Another big deal on Tri-Iodine, the best, cleanest iodine. Take action now. The start of summer sale kickoff is now live. And look at this. Nice black hat, high quality, with a nice leather patch, made in the USA, just classy. And that's from Dickie. Really proud of that. And look at this bad boy. I designed this bad boy, the concept. 1776 Redneck Deluxe. I mean, that is good stuff with the two crossed musket rifles. That is a good-looking, good old boy right there. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com and stick your finger right in New World Order's all CNI and say, screw you, globalists. We're keeping Alex Jones on the air.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. Remember, the start of summer kickoff sale is on right now for the next 2 weeks. We've got major deals on our best-selling products. Today's the last day to take advantage of the buy one, get one free on the methylene blue tincture. You're going to want to get that today. It ends tonight. The new sale is if you buy one bovine colostrum plus, you get a second one absolutely free. Buy one zeolite detox, and you get a second one of those for 50% off. This deal ends Monday, January 29th at midnight. Of course, Ultimate Power is back in stock and better than ever. Clean energy, sharp focus, Ultimate Power. And of course, today is one of the last days that you can order your 250th birthday t-shirt in order to get it for the 4th of July. So you want to order by June 28th, it's the 26th today. But don't wait. Place your order to make sure that you are decked out in patriotic gear from thealexjonesstore.com at your 4th of July barbecue. It's thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. So we got a lot of stories still to cover in this final hour, including what is going on in Europe, England in particular. Before we do that, we're going to stick with race and Judaism and anti-white hatred here in America, since it does seem to be the sort of underlying, you know, undercurrent driving so much of our politics these days. And I got to be honest, I'm kind of sick of the people who brought us to this point suddenly complaining about it. So it's a little bit infuriating. I mean, we played Ben Shapiro earlier, and he's a great example, right? Opposing at every pass. It's one thing if the left is opposing us. It's one thing if the left, with their anti-white racial extremism, is trying to, we're used to that. We know that. And for people on our side, it's not a confusing point of division. But when you have people that claim to be on the right, that claim to be the conservative voice of America, and they're the ones calling you a racist for wanting to protect your heritage and your homeland, if they're the ones who are demonizing you for simply noticing the strategy by which the left is using racial grievance to gain power, it's a much, much, much bigger problem. When somebody like Ben Shapiro, with the profile that he has, with the stance, with the position of, you know, conservative authority that he has in America, it's actually extremely damaging, because what happens is maybe you do have politicians, maybe you do have congressmen and senators we're looking around and going, hey, white people aren't being treated very fairly here. This isn't right. And, you know, somehow Steve King was one of these. But, of course, then he was immediately stripped of all of his committee assignments and basically forced out of the Congress, because he basically said exactly what I just said, where he's just like, what's wrong with white people? What's wrong with white power, like everybody else is bragging about their power. White people built this country, didn't they? And of course, it was Republicans and conservatives like Ben Shapiro, quote unquote conservatives, who were the first to demonize him and throw him to the side. I mean, even now you've got Ben Shapiro's butt buddy, Jeremy Boring, making entire, you know, podcasts, again, demonizing the resistance to this takeover. They're the ones causing, I'm kind of sick of this, to be honest with you. And then to be blamed for it on top of it. And then to have Ben Shapiro, who himself was one of the major bulwarks, one of the major barriers. Because again, if you have a congressman or senator that thinks maybe, hey, you know, I'm no white supremacist, I'm no racist, but I think it's unfair the way white people are being treated. If he's got a leftist saying, you can't say that, you're white supremacist, he probably doesn't care. But if it's Ben Shapiro or his ilk going, ooh, we got to stay away from, that's really dangerous territory you're going towards there. We can't have that. That is so much more damaging, so much more of a limitation for us just putting in place common sense, basic moral laws. It's people on our side that are even more damaging, but of course we're getting it from both sides and they both agree on this. Again, you want to know who's behind the DSA succeeding. Ben Shapiro is going to blame, how do you put it, overeducated, useless white people. The reality is the vast majority of people who voted for the DSA were not white. In fact, I believe if you look at the breakdown of votes for Mamdani, I'm pretty sure a majority of Jews voted for Mamdani. I'm pretty sure the only demographic that didn't was white people. Okay? Meanwhile, foreign billionaire George Soros confirmed to be spending at least $102 million on Democrats for midterms. Another one of these overeducated, useless white women, right? George Soros. This is the same donor funding domestic terrorism in America. Investigations traced George Soros funding to 54 groups directly tied to domestic terrorism. Here's where it gets crazy. Each one of these groups also networks with as many as 300 separate entities orchestrating terrorism. We traced over $80 million from the Open Societies Foundation to at least 54 groups engaged in crime and domestic terrorism on U.S. soil or that are pro-terrorism, according to his own files, so it's rock solid. Over $23 million went to at least 7 groups that are doing things that meet the FBI's definition of domestic terrorism. George Soros has been linked to training terrorists on American soil. The Center for Third World Organizing, for example, is an organization that has a hub that fused together several really extreme organizations. We found $400,000 going to them, and they openly boast of the fact that they threw down during the uprisings in Minnesota, obviously referring to the rioting and boasting of how many thousands of people they helped train. A lot of these groups have created what they'll call a protest guide or activism toolkit. These same organizers staged protests and created activism toolkits. They engaged in direct action training, and their network openly glorified and supported riots like the 2020 George Floyd unrest, Antifa-linked protest, and pro-Palestinian protest. They trained in confrontational and disruptive protests, including property damage. This is domestic terrorism, and somehow George Soros isn't being arrested. Gosh, whatever could it be? What is protecting him, I wonder? This, of course, is from all the way back in 2014, these documents showing direct coordination between not just the Antifa terrorists who were egging on the Black Lives Matter rioters to do things like throw rocks at cops, but also with the cops themselves and the power structure there in the municipality of Baltimore that they were in cahoots with. This, of course, was run by George Soros's son, not Alexander Soros, but Jonathan Soros, who was running the Friends of Democracy program. Why? Why are we not arresting all of these people? Why are we not rounding up the networks of domestic terrorists? After all, Donald Trump declared Antifa domestic terrorists 6 months ago. The whole point of doing that was because then you could shut down their bank accounts. Then you could investigate who gave them money. Then you could arrest the people, not just the mindless thugs carrying out orders they don't even understand, but what about the people giving them the orders? What about people funding their networks or coordinating their action? None of them have been gone after. So again, sorry if I'm a little bit disbelieving of Donald Trump's claims that he takes communism really seriously and is fighting it with everything he's got. He has more tools at his disposal to destroy this crap than he could ever possibly need, and yet he never does anything about it. George Soros, of course, not American. I don't even know where he lives. We don't even know. I mean, is he's just some foreign dude with an infinite amount of money, an agent of the Rothschilds, who systematically undercuts our entire system routinely, hundreds of millions of dollars. God only knows how many deaths this man is responsible for as a consequence of his funding of AGs that refuse to enforce the law. But we just take it. We just allow it to happen. And then we allow people like Ben Shapiro to blame us for it. It is our fault because we're not taking the threat they pose seriously. And I got, it's just, there are parts that are infuriating and there are parts that are genuinely funny. I don't know which one this is. I'm about to show you a video. I don't know if I should laugh or rage. Let's go to clip number 31 here. This is kind of, in a nutshell, this is like the mindset that we're dealing with. And this is why you don't argue with communists. This is why you don't debate with communists. This is why you crush communists. Because listen to this lady. Clip number 31. You tell me if this is the type of person you're going to waste your precious breath saying a single word to, or if she should just be arrested and expelled from the country. Where do you want to put your energy? Here is a Haitian immigrant in Massachusetts, of all places, talking about the fact that temporary protected status has now been removed from Haitians and Syrians. Let's watch.
This is the time for all of us to raise our voices and to say this country is also our country, is also the country of our immigrants, because we are the one who built it.
Think she's open to a high-level discussion about the contributions the immigrant population has had on America? I mean, I hope I don't need to explain to you. I hope I don't need to elaborate on what should be just imminently obvious to absolutely everybody. The thing she just said, like, it does, it's so stupid I don't even know how to discuss it. What is the one aspect of an immigrant that makes them an immigrant? What is the one thing that you can say defines every single immigrant you could point to? The one thing that immigrant means is that you did not help build this country. It means you just got here. What are you supposed to say to this type of person? We built this country. We immigrants built this country. She thinks Haitians and Syrians built this country. She thinks she built a country she just arrived in. Like, what? How could that even be? What? Just what? Like, that's what I literally don't have any way to even combat this. I mean, they're literally saying the people that just showed up here somehow built this country. I mean, when she goes in a store, does she think she built the store? Like, you know, she walks into Target and she's like, this is a magnificent Target I built, that I put together. I know I just walked in 5 seconds ago, but now that I'm here, I'm pretty sure I'm responsible for all of this. I'm pretty sure this was me, actually. And I'm just as American as you, she says, through an accent you can hardly understand. We don't need to listen to what foreigners think America is. We don't need to give any credence to their insane ramblings. We do not need to try to explain to them. Yeah, look at me. I built this ship with my bare hands. Exactly. I built this ship. This ship would not exist without me. You just got on here and you got on here illegally. Imagine breaking into a house and being like, I'm pretty sure I built this house. Pretty sure this is mine. Pretty sure I'm the reason this is here. They need to go away. They need to be sent home. Hey, They did such a wonderful job with America. Go do it in Haiti. Honestly, we should not give Haiti back to them. Why are we not in charge of Haiti? That's my real question. Why do we have just a genuine failed state right off our coast that we just don't care? We just don't care that an island nation like 50 miles from us is literally descending into cannibalism because they're run by a prison gang lord named Barbecue. And there was talk for a while that was like 100 American dudes with guns could probably take over Haiti. Like, why haven't we done that? It would solve a lot of our problems. It would obviously solve the Haitian immigration problem. We could just keep them there, send them back there. It would also solve all of the problems that we've had this entire time with where to send the immigrants. It's like, oh, they're just like, we have an agreement with Timbuktu that they're going to take we're going to send some of them to the supermax in El Salvador. It's like, why don't we just send like one battalion of Marines to Haiti? It'll be ours. And then we just put them all there. It would actually probably improve Haiti to have American investments building prisons there to send all of our illegal immigrants. Let's make Haiti a colony of America and use it to store all of the Haitians that have come over here. It's a one-size-fits-all solution. I think it would be extremely easy. How is Haiti the only Caribbean country that Trump hasn't threatened to overthrow yet? It doesn't even have a leader. I haven't checked in a while. But for a long time, it was like, you go to the Wikipedia of Haiti, and it's like, what's Haiti's government structure? And it was kind of like, we don't know. It doesn't really have one. There's a guy who calls himself the president, but his name is Barbecue, and he was basically just the biggest and strongest prisoner. So I guess he's in charge. I guess he's a king? Is he a king? I don't know. You know, what do you call it when there is no governmental structure, when it's just armed men killing each other? What type of government program, what type of government structure is that? I guess it makes sense. We can't overthrow a government. It's actually brilliant. Maybe Haiti figured out the one way to avoid having your power structure overthrown by America, it's just not to have one. Just thinking about the fact these people are in our country, and it's just astonishing. It's genuinely mind-blowing. Getting invited to your black friend's barbecue, he's Haitian. Yeah. Well, you don't like cat? You don't like eating cat? Of course, Mamdani posted these photos. Ashura is a time of remembrance, sacrifice, and reflection. Okay, if you say so. Today, on the 10th day of Muharram, we are reminded of Imam Hussein's unwavering commitment to truth and dignity, his timeless legacy. Where are the women? Sorry to interrupt there, Mamdani. Why are you in a room with nothing but men? I'm sorry, I thought you were a progressive leftist Democrat. I thought your whole point was that, you know, white men are evil and it's white people, but it's also men, right? Like, why are there no women in your celebration? Because you adhere to a barbarous and backwards religion that is completely incompatible with modern American sentiments? And yet you're voted for by all the leftists. You can't talk to these people. What do you, I really want to know. And I do wish that leftists would talk to us. It's obvious why they don't, because, you know, you see how it goes usually. But like, I wish the leftists would talk to us, because I would love to like actually get their response. Then again, I know what it would be. It would just be, you're a bigot, because they don't actually care. They don't actually care that the exact same people that will harp on endlessly about non-existent patriarchy here in America, when presented with the reality of the fact that they are actively importing a deeply misogynistic culture, they will just call you bigoted for recognizing that because their brains are broken. We have to stop trying to talk to them. We have to just put them in their place. I'm just going to keep repeating that message over and over until somebody does something about it. Let's go to this clip here. A Jewish student was subjected to persistent and escalating anti-Semitic harassment at a Colorado middle school, and the school failed to stop it from continuing. This is Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, clip number 8, talking about an anti-Semitic experience in school. Being targeted by a school for your ethnicity? I didn't realize this happened to anybody except for white people. Let's watch.
Where, again, this kid was harassed incessantly by his classmates, and the school did nothing. So we filed this case. Mm-hmm. I'm glad Boulder Valley District School System's already reached out to us. But proof's in the pudding. Like, I want to see every teacher get trained to make sure that, again, they don't accept anti-Semitism.
And you know they're going to get it. And you know they're going to get it because this is what happens for everybody except for white people. Same thing happened with the NAACP in Loudoun County, where they did some course about slavery. The black parents objected. And, of course, you know, the school districts themselves are, like, eager to do whatever they can to comply, right? If you go and you go, hey, you're teaching a course about how white people are evil, you need to stop, it'll be, I don't know if we, are you a racist? Are you a white supremacist? Is that why you're asking? If it's a black person going, hey, I don't want my, you know, kid being taught about slavery, the same thing happened with them. They actually created an entire office. They employed somebody full time to oversee the entire school district's curriculum to make sure it comported with their idea. It's the same thing the ADL is doing. The school can apologize, and I'm sure they did immediately. I'm sure it was just like right out there, and God only knows the actual details of this. You know, who knows? But, you know, the ADL is not like, hey, look, this was an unfortunate oversight, and we know you don't have the best, you know, we know that you, the Boulder School District, don't have bad intentions, but we wanted to make you aware of this, and thank you for, you know, working to, you know, deal with this one totally unique instance. No, no, it becomes, we need to write their curriculum now. Actually, now we need control of your school district. You have violated our sovereign right to exist without criticism. You've criticized us. Now you need, and we are going to have an office in your district. We need to see your whole curriculum. We need to see every single employee trained by us in our mindset. And they need to adhere to that or they need to be fired. It's just, if, tell you what, if Jews could turn it down by about 10 notches and whites could ramp it up by about 2 notches, everything would be good. Everything would be cool. We could deal with the anti-white crap by dealing with the anti-white crap. The anti-Jew crap could actually be handled in a way that is commensurate with the actual offense. But for some reason, for some inexplicable slash deeply historically relevant reason, white people under constant abuse in this country never do anything to stop it, whereas every other minority group has gigantic conglomerates, gigantic NGO networks that will wield inordinate power with infinite money to not just correct a mistake or get rid of a lie that's being told, but to force themselves into your organization so that they can then have oversight over absolutely everything that you do. Enough, enough, enough. Especially when it's the ADL themselves who is responsible for spreading a huge amount of the anti-whiteism out there. This is from the ADL itself. Discussions of privilege, specifically white privilege, require advanced skills and anti-bias education. Teaching about it requires a solid foundation for you and your students in understanding conscious bias. We have to be able to discuss white privilege with students. It'd be helpful for you to read or reread Peggy McIntosh's White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack, and Expert from Privilege, Power and Difference by Alan G. Johnson. So, like, just shut up. You all need to shut up. You all are genuinely the ones responsible for all of this. And for some reason, you keep pushing. For some reason, you haven't stopped. The consequences are already starting to mount up, and they're still pushing to demonize white people and further insinuate themselves into our controlled power structure.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple at thealexshowstore.com. You back us. You fund us. You are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at thealexjonesshow.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gates at thealexjonesstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at thealexjonesstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, the 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today and also buy gifts for friends and family and know you're funding the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity-fed water filtration, and it makes this operation possible, multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these T-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll probably come up with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776, 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong, nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 1776 free. Defund the deep state. That's all their designs. America, ride fast, live free. They designed that. Ball caps as well. All limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The good news, ladies and gentlemen, is that the ADL themselves provide us with everything we need to know. Well, everything they need to know, actually, about how to deal with this new uncertain world that we find ourselves in. They never had to really worry about this before because of, you know, their insane power, but that's waning now as a consequence of the, you know, multiple genocides currently being carried out. But luckily, like we've said, the ADL has spent the last decade very kindly instructing white people on how to understand and come to terms with the fact that they're being attacked, how to accept and actually agree with the very people demonizing them. So I think you can take your own lesson here. I think you can take your own medicine and lucky for you, I know you've tried to delete the story, but I found it on the Wayback Machine. How should I talk about race in my mostly Jewish classroom? Because they talk about what an important thing it is to discuss race, in particular things like white privilege. Well, lucky for you, this is a fantastic way to now talk about Jewish privilege. Okay? Jewish students in a predominantly Jewish classroom should be discussing Judaism for the same reasons and because they are members of a multicultural society in the world. Sometimes teachers feel reluctant to raise the topic of Jews, especially if they're teaching in an all or predominantly Jewish community. Teachers may be concerned that students bring their own assumptions and stereotypes, will hold back for fear of saying the wrong thing, or bias will emerge and will be hard to facilitate and contain. Also, teachers may fear pushback from administrators or parents who feel they shouldn't talk about it at all. But y'all, just like the ADL says, it is your obligation to talk about Jewish privilege. I know it's going to be uncomfortable, but luckily the ADL has plenty of guidelines and tips for the Jews out there that may feel uncomfortable with the discussion of your power and how it's going to be ended. So you've got to get over it now, which again, you were kind enough, lovely enough to teach us stupid white people how to accept this. And now it's your turn. Okay. Students in particular, Jewish students don't want to participate. Yeah, I bet they wouldn't. Bet they don't. Sometimes don't participate in discussions about Judaism. Because they feel inadequate, they'll be mocked, embarrassed by their lack of knowledge, or concerned that strong feelings will arise. Many may think the topic isn't relevant to them. When engaging any conversations about tough topics, it's critical to set up group guidelines or agreements to promote classroom environment that is safe and respectful. Do this collaboratively with students to make sure that following areas are discussed: listening and interrupting, how to deal with strong emotions. See, I think Jonathan Greenblatt, Ben Shapiro, you're experiencing some pretty strong emotions right now, and that's understandable. But you've got to suppress those because we're trying to have an adult conversation here, okay? I'm so glad we have this guideline, these guidelines. It's amazing. It's helpful to remember and share with students that are often, deep learning, the kind that is lasting and long-term, comes when things are uncomfortable or quote-unquote sticky, and you're able to work through these things. That's the aha epiphany moment. It might also be helpful to explain to students that often when things are complicated or when there is conflict, if things are handled well, there can be higher understanding or improved relations on the other side. Okay? But, you know, tip number three is very important. The goal is not to be pro-Semitic. Okay? They say colorblind. We're not trying to just ignore the differences here. Okay? The goal of teaching about Jews and Judaism is to help students understand the historical context and current manifestations of Judaism in the United States. While there are many Jews who believe the best way to eliminate anti-Semitism is to not talk about it, not notice religious differences at all, i.e. be colorblind, they may want to tell young people to not to notice differences because they conflate noticing differences with having bias. It may also be a way to avoid dealing with discussions of Judaism because they are uncomfortable. It's completely natural to notice Judaism and other physical characteristics. Telling children not to see it is incorrect and confusing. Let students know that noticing differences do not promote bias. Judging and discrimination based on Judaism does. Further, it's important to acknowledge that Jewish is a racial identity and even explore with students what being Jewish means to them. You may also want to share with parents that you're talking about these issues because some Jewish parents may believe that talking about Judaism makes them or their children anti-Semitic. Okay. So look, we need to reach out to Jewish parents and say, hey, look, we're going to talk to your children about how their race, the Jews, are responsible for all the evil in the world. And you're going to maybe experience some strong emotions about this, but that's totally natural and normal. And that's part of the process of working through and accepting our demonization of you. Do you understand? Because this is what the ADL has been telling white parents and white students since 2017 when this article was published. So, again, are we in a system of equality here? Are these types of conversations we should be having in public schools? Because this instruction booklet is for teachers to talk about white privilege. Now, white privilege doesn't actually exist, never did. Jewish privilege, on the other hand, oh boy. You start looking for that, you'll find it. But of course, we're going to provide opportunities for Jews to learn and to empathize with non-Jews, okay? You haven't been taught to empathize yet, but we're going to correct that, okay? Just sit down and listen, all right? A white man is talking. Regardless of whether or not the religious diversity of our larger society is represented in your school, it's important to bring diverse voices and perspectives into the classroom and in other ways besides personal sharing. This is particularly true if you have a predominantly Jewish school and you're talking about Judaism. Use children's books, short videos, movies, literature, stories by teens, or a range of video chat to expose students to other voices on Judaism, as this fifth grade teacher did. So yeah, you want to sort of meet them where they are, right? Because again, the last thing you want, if you're a Jew out there and you like the white people, you want to teach your fellow Jews what a problem they are, what a privilege, what privilege they enjoy and how they have a responsibility to use that privilege for the betterment of everybody, not just Jewish supremacy. If you're thinking, you don't want to like drive them away by hitting them too hard, right? You want to ease them into it. You want to have some cool teenagers come in, talk to the 10th graders about how Jews are responsible for all the evil in the world and how, we live in a system of Jewish supremacy that must be torn down. You want to like have like a cool cartoon to express that, because if you just come out and say it, obviously Jewish privilege, like an aspect of that is that they're going to push back, obviously, right? So we want to address Jewish privilege in non-defensive ways. That's what I'm expressing here. Address Jewish privilege and non. The term Jewish privilege, okay, is one that often produces anxiety and defensiveness among Jewish people. Well, that's what happens when you're raised with this supremacist ideology, including students. At the same time, if a student is going to engage in conversations about religion, privilege has to be on the table. The goal of a discussion about Jewish privilege is not to make anyone feel guilty for who they are, defensive about their lot in life. The goal is to help students understand and analyze issues of power and privilege as they relate to Judaism. One way to start the conversation is to talk with students about the ways bias manifests in institutions, i.e. discrimination. Explain that bias can impact people in two ways, by discriminating against somebody or advantaging others, depending on religion and other aspects of identity. Right? So, Jews may have sort of unconscious Judaism, unconscious Jewish bias. They may be unwilling to acknowledge their privilege, but we're going to help them through this. We're going to help them. We're going to instruct them, because after all, we are the light to the world, and it's up to us to draw Jews out of the darkness of privilege and supremacy and into the light of multiculturalism. Okay? Define Jewish privilege. Sorry, just correcting the ADL's statement here. Define Jewish privilege as unearned and often unseen or unrecognized advantages, benefits, or rights conferred upon people based upon membership in, says, a dominant group, i.e. white people, heterosexual people, men, able-bodied, we'll just say Judaism. There you go. Based on their membership in Judaism, beyond what is commonly experienced by members of the non-Jewish group. Like getting into college and stuff. Another angle to discuss privilege is to talk with your students about the ways they feel disempowered or discriminated against as young people, often through ageism directed towards them. This can include things like not being allowed to do certain things when they think they should be allowed to, assumptions adults make about them, and discriminatory acts that target them. Yeah, you're going to want to, emphasize and try to foster, and if it's not there, then try to create division between the students and their parents, for sure. It's important to identify dominant identities, i.e. being white, because students may not accept that they have white privilege by saying they belong to another marginalized group, but I'm gay, poor, female. Well, that may be true. It doesn't erase. Okay, sorry, I forgot to change. Okay, so how should we do this? Students can reflect on ways as they, as young people, lack privilege in these situations. This discussion will help them understand the concept of privilege without getting defensive, and it will help to foster empathy. You can then make the connection to Jewish privilege. Okay, so first you start off by just going, well, everybody has privilege. Older people have privileges you young people don't have. What are ways in which Jewish people also have privilege that you don't have? See how easy that is to sort of move from, a genuine conversation about you know, rights and who has them and who doesn't, to then actively demonizing one people group because of how they were born. See how easy it is to do that with the instruction of the ADL, how they've been instructing our teachers to do for a long time now? Since you've set the groundwork, hopefully the leap to Jewish privilege isn't too far of a reach for them. It will be important to identify dominant identities, i.e. Jewish, because students may not accept that they have Jewish privilege by saying they belong to another marginalized group. But the Holocaust. While that may be true, it doesn't erase their Jewish identity, okay? You're always Jewish, and you're going to be Jewish. Doesn't matter if you, you know, do things that might mitigate that privilege that you enjoy. I mean, can I be done now? Is it not obvious the point I'm trying to make? When you read a statement from the self-appointed Jewish overlords at the ADL that they published 10 years ago as an instruction booklet for teachers, and if you replace one word with another, you replace white with Jews, and it suddenly feels like an instruction booklet on how to indoctrinate children into being Nazis, is it not clear why these people are poisonous to our entire society? How they are the ones responsible for Mam Dani, the immigration, and everything else that we're dealing with because they literally have this incredible power? I'm talking about the ADL specifically. They've been around since 1913. They've had veto power over everything published in America since the 1950s. They are writing Sunday school curriculum in addition to public school curriculum. By the way, they're also deeply ingrained and have positions of power in every single AI company that, again, Jonathan Greenblatt himself brags about, constantly goes on and on about ChatGPT, Gemini, you know, OpenAI. We are in all of their ears talking to them, making sure that they tell that their programs tell the truth. Is it any surprise? AI chatbots have a massive left-wing bias. ChatGPT is the biggest offender. A new analysis by the Washington Post has found several leading artificial intelligence chatbots lean left on political questions, with OpenAI's ChatGPT producing the most one-sided responses of any major AI model tested. ChatGPT, whose logo is the Star of David, who is taking direction directly from the ADL about how to program their bots. Oh, but it's overeducated white people, I'm sure. So look, the ADL can just take its own advice. It may be, Jonathan May Greenblatt may be feeling, you know, defensive that his privilege is being called out, but this is a process you're going to have to go through as we all learn to live in this multicultural world. You know, the Jews are not going to survive if they don't learn to give up their privilege and supremacy. ADL ranks Grok as the worst AI chatbot at detecting anti-Semitism, rates Claude the best. Why is the ADL allowed to exist? Here's a question. Why is the ADL allowed to exist? What do they do? Like, what benefit do they provide? They're not like a charity, right? They're not like helping the downtrodden. We just have this organization that just appoints itself at the head of our AI, our education system. They train our FBI. And they're just anti-American Jewish supremacists. I'm looking forward to, Ben Shapiro breaking this down next. Kidding. That's never going to happen. From ANC_aesthetics on X, the best thing the Trump administration could do in response to the communist terrorists being elected by New York City Dems is to just denaturalize and deport them using the Immigration and Nationality Act and the Communist Control Act of 1954. They are completely within their rights to do this. It would create a national scandal that would force mainstream Democrats to defend these radical communists, which they don't want to do. They want to ignore them. More importantly, it sets a precedent and severely hampers the long-term plans of the DSA communist left. But it's also just an act of survival. It's also just like the bare minimum we could do to not be taken over by radical communists is just deport the lawbreakers who got into our country by lying. It's like a million, there's a million billion ways to do it. The Communist Control Act of 1954 would be one of them. An act to outlaw the Communist Party, prohibit members of communist organizations from serving in certain representative capacities and for other purposes. And these people are avowed communists. And we played the clip earlier this week. I'm not sure if we played it on my show, but, you know, earlier this week it was one of these socialist women. I think it was the Chevalier woman. She was asked, are you a communist? And she's like, well, you know, we have a knee-jerk reaction to that. It's like, okay, so yes. So the answer is yes, she should go to jail. So the answer is yes, she should be deported immediately. It's not complicated. It's very simple. And people are, again, it's getting to a point where people are sick of the way things are going. They're sick of just the obvious racial motivation being ignored by the people that agree with the racial motivation. Let's go to clip number 15 here. This is Megyn Kelly saying what genuinely every single American should be saying to every single Haitian TPS receiver here in America. Here's Megyn Kelly.
And look, this has been going on for over a dozen years. Go home. Get out. We know our country's better than yours. That's because we filled it with our work ethic and our culture and our values.
And our people.
You being here only dilutes it for us, those who built it and live it. And half of you people, more than half, you won't assimilate. We don't want you. We don't care if you're offended. Get out. Go home. Go back to Haiti. Sorry. I'm thinking about our friends in Ohio who've been dealing with these TPS Haitians for years now, who are drunk driving all over their towns and killing people. This is the whole cats and dogs thing. Like, they don't want to live like Americans live. And this was supposed to be a temporary, it was supposed to be temporary help. And it's turned into another backdoor way of allowing someone permanent residency here. And they take advantage of all of our public services and
You have nothing to apologize for, lady. She's like, sorry. Sorry I referred to their homeland as effing Haiti, but like, no, seriously, they need to go back. No, they need to go back right away. And I wouldn't even be that, like, offensive about it, except that they don't even appreciate what we've given them. You know, the video that we showed her, it wasn't the woman saying, this country's amazing, you know, It's the place of dreams. You've given me and my family so much, and all we want to do is stay here and be good citizens and help you build it. No, they feel entitled to it. They feel like they already own it. They actually feel like we somehow stole it from them. So, like, they have to go. You all have to go. You show me somebody who's, hey, look, you know, Haiti sucks, and I'm so glad I'm here, and I really don't want to leave because you guys are way better at running a civilization than we are. Like, okay, now we're talking. Now we have a little bit of, at the very least, you could show some appreciation for what you've been given out of the goodness of our hearts. But it's the fact that they literally feel entitled to it, that they feel as though they are the power and that they're offended that we won't just give them what they want. We have to not give it to them anymore. We have to. This is just how the world works. Like, you can't let people like this get away with this crap. They have to be sent back. And if they won't go back, they have to be imprisoned. It's beyond ridiculous. Let's go now to clip number... Well, you know what? Let's go to clip number 18 here while we're at it. Considering the fact that we're talking about all the demonization... of white cultures, the hatred and vitriol all of these foreign people from failed states feel about America. So they're here to correct us and fix us because we can't do anything ourselves. This is actually happening right now in Africa. Let's watch. It's all of the Christian slaves. Go ahead and roll it. Okay? So this is actively happening right now in their homelands. People that are over here telling us how much better they are than us. telling us how much they have to teach us, telling us they built America, telling us they're settling in our country as revenge for colonialism. This is what we stopped when we got there. This is what white people put a stop to. And only since we've been convinced to abandon our authority in Africa has it returned with a menace. And for our radio listeners, you just saw a line of about 100 guys with their elbows tied behind their backs together, tied one to the next in single file line, being marched to the slave market. So that's actively happening right now in their countries. The people that do this come over to our country, like Ilhan Omar and her family, and then continue to pledge allegiance to their home country that's busy enslaving people and basically are incapable of rising above the moral basement that Europe got out of in the 400s. So spare me. Let's go to clip number 10 here. This is a Minnesota politician also no longer feeling constrained by the claims of racism. Let's watch.
Guess what? There is nothing racist about calling out a criminal. So when I say that it's time. I mean, this is what they do in the great state of Minnesota. You know, our culture, that Scandinavian culture, by the way, I better make it clear before I go any farther. Minnesotans, are there any here? Ah, good. Then let me just say. Okay, well, born, yeah, you're wearing that hat. You must be from northern Minnesota, the Iron Range. No. Probably closer to Iowa. No, I'm going to leave that alone. The reason I bring it up is because I tell people regularly, Minnesota did not create passive-aggressive behavior, but we did perfect it, okay? And I happen to be more on the aggressive-aggressive side, which doesn't always work in Minnesota, as Ralph will tell you. You know, sometimes Minnesotans are so afraid that you're going to call us a racist, you're going to call us an Islamophobe, you're going to call us some name that we just don't want to get into that fight. You know what? I would argue that I never did care, but I'm done being careful, even the least bit careful. And I don't really care where you come from. But if you come to this great country, you have to understand you're coming here to be an American. We celebrate everyone's culture. We're happy with that as long as you are an American. Celebrate your culture. I don't care. Italian, Polish, Somali. Okay? But they don't assimilate. And if they don't assimilate, then they should go the hell back to where they came from.
Amen. I mean, where have these guys been the last 80 years? It's not complicated. It doesn't mean you hate them. You have to protect yourself. You have to protect your family. You have to protect your nation. And when somebody comes here with the intention of destroying your nation, you don't have to feel guilty about kicking them in the ass on the way back home.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy.
Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.